Turn the recording on. Anyway, welcome to NLA's weekly conference call. It's Monday, July 27, 2015, and we broadcast every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time to midnight. And if you're listening live over another network and would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-562-3140. And the participant code is 385-698. And all of the radio hosts are invited into the queue if they have a question or comment before we open it up to the general floor. If anybody would like to email a question, send it in to questions@nationallibertyalliance.org. And hopefully one of the moderators will get that and alert us to it. Also, please support our business partners. They got their banners on the right side of our website, which some of the proceeds support NLA's effort to save America. And also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right. And now, in keeping with our usual schedule, we'll have a reading into the mind, a look into the mind of God. And I believe tonight, John was going to read Proverbs chapter 10. And let's see. Let me just make sure that that's what we're on. Proverbs 10. Yeah. Wisdoms. Okay. So without further ado, the parables of Solomon chapter 10. A wise son maketh the father glad, but a foolish son is the sorrow of his mother. Treasures of wickedness shall profit nothing, but justice shall deliver from death. The Lord will not afflict the soul of the just with famine, and he will disappoint the deceitful practices of the wicked. The slothful hand had wrought property, but the hand of the industrious getteth riches. He that trusteth to lies feedeth the winds, and the same runneth after the birds that fly away. He that gathereth in a harvest is a wise son, but he that snorteth in the summer is the son of confusion. The blessing of the Lord is upon the head of the just, but iniquity covereth the mouth of the wicked. The memory of the just is with praises. The name of the wicked shall rot. The wise of heart receiveth precepts. A fool is beaten with his lips. He that walketh sincerely walketh confidently, but he that perverteth his ways shall be manifest. He that winketh with eye shall cause sorrow, and the foolish in his lips shall be beaten. The mouth of the just is a vein of life, and the mouth of the wicked covereth iniquity. Hatred stirreth up strife, and charity covereth all sins. In the lips of the wise is wisdom found, and a rod on the back of him that wanteth sense. Wise men lay up knowledge, but the mouth of the fool is next to confusion. The substance of the rich man is the city of his strength. The fear of the poor is their poverty. The work of the just is unto life, but the fruit of the wicked unto sin. The way of life to him that observeth correction, but he that forsaketh reproofs goeth astray. Lying lips hide hatred. He that uttereth repose is foolish. In the multitude of words there shall not want sin, but he that refraineth his lips is most wise. The tongue of the just is as choice silver, but the heart of the wicked is nothing worth. The lips of the just teach many, but they that are ignorant shall die in the want of understanding. The blessing of the Lord maketh men rich, neither shall affliction be joined unto them. A fool worketh mischief, as it were, for sport, but wisdom is prudence to a man. That which the wicked feareth shall come upon him, and the just their desire shall be given. As the tempest that passes, so the wicked shall be no more, but the just is an everlasting foundation. As vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to them that sent him. The fear of the Lord shall prolong days, and the years of the wicked shall be shortened. The expectation of that just joy, but the hope of the wicked shall perish. Strength of the upright is the way of the Lord, and fear to them that worketh evil. The just shall never be moved, but the wicked shall not dwell on the earth. The mouth of the just shall bring forth wisdom, and the tongue of the perverse shall perish. The lips of the just consider which is acceptable, and the mouth of the wicked utter perverse things. Amen. That's 32 verses of chapter 10. And I think there's a couple of really good verses here that we could take a lesson from. I know I did. I know that it's wiser to keep your mouth shut than open it sometimes. So that was certainly one of them. Anyway, John is not here. He had a medical procedure. He's still recuperating. He's fine. But he has some time to come out of that. It's not easy. Certain things that are going on with his health that he needs to take care of. So he'll be back next week. I'm going to go ahead and... I don't know that we have a specific subject. Let me see if we have any announcements other than the normal. We need more people to fill numerous leadership roles, so please call Jan or Robert and find their contact information in our directory. And we still need more funding if we are to continue filing papers. If there's anything to announce, we should have Gary or Robert or Jan is on here. And we'll take it from there. We're going to have lots of time, since I'm not going to do any long monologue. I don't have any specific subject to cover, although there's certainly a lot of stuff going on right now all over the country, and certainly a lot of stuff going on with the NLA as we continue to push papers, get committees going, and talk to people that have contacted us that are interested in what we're doing, that we've piqued their interest, and we've had some pretty promising, I don't want to know what I want to say, people in certain places of authority that are interested and watching us and certainly are paying attention to anything that we do send them, because I do believe we're starting to get the attention of those people that understand that if this government wants to continue, and those that are in it, that they need to listen to groups such as ours in as far as where the people are going and on how to stay on top of this wave that is coming. And so it's obvious that, you know, we're a serious group. We're nationwide. We filed some pretty powerful paperwork. We certainly are starting to get some notice, and some of those powers that be are starting to look this way. So hopefully, you know, good will come out of that. And I know, you know, that, you know, part of our strategy with filing this paperwork is to eventually do some enforcement, and that is coming. And of course, the more people that know about it, the more enforcement, you know, the more support with that enforcement we'll get from many different areas. So as we keep continuing to put these government officials on notice, I firmly believe that there are people within those ranks that will rise to their oath and will help facilitate us in our endeavor to bring justice back into America and into the courts, and meaningful participations in our elections, which are a joke right now, and fixing up our committee man system so we actually have some viable candidates instead of some bought and paid for candidates like we're getting now. So that being said, let me unmute. Hang on, because I don't know. Okay, that was a mistake unmuting everybody. But Gary and Jan, if you have anything to say, I'm going to invite you to go ahead. You should be unmuted anyway because you're a moderator. And anybody that's like on the any of our sponsors could get in the queue now first if they have anything to announce, and I'll take them first. But I don't know if Gary or Jan or anybody has anything else or any other committee person that's doing something that would like to come on first and announce that. You can get in the queue, and certainly any of the moderators can talk whenever they want. We have three or four people in the queue right now, so we're gonna go to question and answer pretty quickly here, and we may take on a topic here depending on what people want to discuss as far, because we got an awful lot of stuff. And this Monday night class should be a learning time for everybody. And we certainly have a lot of stuff going on in a lot of different directions. And we have a lot of committees coming up that we need to manage and to focus. And that's what that's what we're in the process of doing now. Well, we continue to write our paperwork. So, let's see, I'm going to open up the question and answer if nobody has anything else to add out there. Okay, we have Fred Johnson. I'm going to unmute you, Fred, and you can go ahead and shoot with your question.
Yeah, California Dave here.
Yeah, for some reason it unmuted you instead of Fred. But go ahead, Dave. You're open, so go ahead.
Okay, thank you, and I hope John has a rapid recovery. And you can probably guess what I'm going to ask, but I'm very passionate about the whole laser focus effort to get that first sheriff to invite us in for the armed escort into the first courthouse. Which committee has been assigned that focus?
Well, I don't know that there is a sheriff's committee. I haven't had any updates from them, so if anybody's on from the sheriff's committee, they can give us an update. I did try to reach the two sheriffs. I didn't have any luck doing that. The one was in Utah, and the other one was the California sheriff that took the arrest rights away from, I believe it was the Forest Service.
Yeah, DeAugustini.
I did try to put some calls in. I was unsuccessful at that. But, we have a couple of ex-law enforcement. We thought maybe it would be good for them to get in touch with him first.
Do you think it's time for the IRC committee to start working on some writs of execution?
Well, we have some writs of execution that are actually past due. And some of that's because we've been overwhelmed and John has been ill and hasn't been able to get them out. Look, the Utah thing we have to concentrate on first. That's the first one that we went into. That's the one that we actually got the presentment going in on the judges. I think Utah's probably easier for us to turn. We have a sheriff that seems to be somewhat, sympathetic to us. That's gonna, we'll be able to hold his feet to the fire as far as his oath goes. So it makes sense to pursue that first before we go to something else, because really we got to get their attention with the seriousness of our paperwork. They need to start taking us serious.
If we've got momentum in Utah, we should definitely focus all energy on the cooperative sheriff in Utah to get that first sheriff to say, come on in under my armed escort, you administrators.
Right. Now, I don't know, I don't want to put the sheriff on the spot until we talk to him and he understands what kind of an organization we have, because it's going to require a lot of support on his side from the people. Very, very tough for a sheriff to stand up and do that and take us in under armed escort if there's nobody there behind him.
I'm thinking if he's taken lawful notice of all the papers he's received, he should be fully informed, fully confident, and fully aware that he's got the people behind him in the form of these papers that he can present along attached to his writ of execution should anyone challenge him. What do you think?
Well, he should, but he ought, look at, he needs home people too. That's the problem. Yes,
okay.
we're supporting him from here, but look at, a sheriff, as much as you like it or not, he's a political animal. He's elected by the members of his county. So it's going to be very important for him to have a showing of people in his county, because otherwise he loses a lot of momentum. Look at, the people that he deals with will not take him serious if they don't think that he has the support of his constituents. You know what I mean?
So should that showing take the form of a petition or a bunch of people with tickets outside? What form should that take?
Look, they should be calling him. They should be talking
to him.
Okay. That's right. People that are in that area, and in that, especially in Utah County. I mean, look, Utah is pretty sparsely populated. So, you know, if we got 20 or 30 or 100 people, it means a lot more than getting 100 people in New York. You know what I mean?
Now, while it may not be as powerful, what about people from outside Utah County calling him with support?
That should be done too. Absolutely.
Okay.
And
all right, good.
I know some sheriffs, you know, they'll talk to you, but they really are more sensitive to their constituents, and it's just the nature of the beast. You can't blame them for that, because look at, if he's not going to stay in office past the next election, you know, that's a tough thing. We put all our eggs in his basket. And then the party does the nasty things that they do to control elections, and he's out. So we want to make him become very popular, and you know, we want to help him. You know, this should be a boost to his notoriety. You know, that's where we can help him by the publicity that we give him, even on our show. Anything he does, we should talk it up. It should go everywhere. You know, so that the people in his community will feel like they're doing the right thing by supporting him. Don't forget, they're going to try to make us look like a fringe kook group. You know that.
Yeah, but all those papers that we've submitted should wash away all the, you know, Jabberwocky and Caterwauling clucking hens should all be washed away by now with all the papers.
Well, it should be, but here's what I'm talking about. The thing is you're right, and even if it was, the people in his county that control the purse strings to his budget and everything else can do a lot of stuff if there's not enough public pressure on them to do the right thing. So whatever's going on in his county, we got to make sure that they keep his budget intact, that he doesn't get attacked from his own party, you know, and that type of stuff. I hate to get into the political, but nevertheless, you're dealing with an elected official, and so these things become pertinent. So he needs
political power is a consideration, but it's the weakest form of power there is.
Absolutely,
it's way weaker. It's way weaker than the judicial power. Yes, it's a force to be reckoned with, but when you've got a base and a collection of, you know, those very powerful legal papers with all the citations and all the education that's been done, if a bunch of pencil necks come in and try to take his budget away, they're going to be indicted.
Absolutely, and what I'm saying is we need to stay on top of that type of stuff. We can't go in there and then drop the ball on him, you know what I mean, because we weren't paying attention or whatever. And I would expect that he would call us and let us know those things. I don't know if you know it, but Sheriff Arpaio, who was another one we were talking about getting a hold of, he was raided by the marshals this past week.
I know.
And they got him, you know, they got him on this thing about profiling and this and that. And, you know, that's like a perfect one for them to get him on, because that's like a real long, drawn-out process when they make claims like that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Okay, well, I don't want to take up too much time, so we'll pick this up again another time. I just wanted to throw it out there. Thank you. Dave's out.
Right. And so don't be afraid, people, to get a hold of those constituents and that sheriff over there. Now, we haven't put his name and number out, but maybe that's something that we can do. I was hoping before we do that, we could talk to him, though. I don't want him inundated with a bunch of calls before I even cold called him. So that's where we're at. And thank you for that, by the way, Dave. Okay, let me see if I can fix my cue here. Fred Johnson,
Hey, this is Dr. Johnson in California. How are you this evening?
Good. How are you doing, Doctor?
I'm good. Just let me rapidly tell you where we're at. We did all the paperwork for my two incarcerated individuals, my son and his partner. My son was in 10 years this last month. And we did all the paperwork working with Rick Rickoff, and it was supposed to be served today. We never got a response from Rick over the weekend, so I put my service people on hold because it's got to be served in San Francisco. So I was wondering if we could somebody get some follow-up on that to see if when and where we can get the stuff done. We provided the affidavits and all of the court transcript, et cetera, all the things that we could do, we did. Mm-hmm. And the paperwork is somewhere in limbo right now, and we don't know what's happened. That is number one. Number two, I'm chomping at the bits to do something. I don't know what, because I don't know. And I was wondering if you had some kind of a mentor. All the training I've ever had, and I've been doing this for close to 40 years, has always been done with some mentor coming in. And I've trained people as a mentor doing scheduled I kid you, I have to pardon me, I'm getting old. Help me here. I used to put on programs all across the country dealing with civics and dealing with stuff like that I had learned so I could teach others. If we had some kind of a mentoring program where somebody could just take me by the, and show me what I'm supposed to do and how to do it, and then I'll take the ball and one gets one, and then two gets two, and then two, and then that number exponentially gets to be where you got a lot of people doing a lot of things.
I wanted
to bring up the thing about Arpaio and the sheriffs that you mentioned. And what Dave said, you've got to remember that these are big fish in a little pond. No matter what size of the county is, they're the big fish in the little pond. And there's only a couple leaders in front of the school of fish, for my metaphor. And if you jump in the middle of the school, you piss off the people if you go too fast in front of you. If you go too slow, you piss up the people in the back of you. You've got to kind of get your norm, or you got to get your proper elevation within that group so that you can take the lead from the guy in front of you and so on. We need to get to that place where our leaders we're attacking the leaders and getting to the leaders so that the school will follow them. And that's the metaphor that mostly works. I mentioned one time on this call that my mentor said, if we could turn the heads of 6% of the people of the country, we could turn the whole country. And somebody jumped in and said, no, it's less than 1%. Well, even more so. But I see us spreading a net very wide and very broad, and then losing a lot of fish because they don't know where to go, what to do. I've got 7 people that are ready to sign up, can't.
What do you mean they can't?
Well, they go on the site and they don't take their name. Somebody signed me in, and that's how I got in. And I don't have PayPal, so it's hard for me to send money. So I have to send money. I'm in a nursing home, so I have to send money through the mails or through a postal order each month, rather than have it taken out of my debit card, and so on. So we just gotta.
Let me answer some of what you
sure.
mentioned, because we absolutely are doing a mentorship program, and the reason you don't feel it or see it is because we're actually mentoring the teachers who are going to teach people. We need people that can write papers also, because this is the whole thing. You got to be able to file these papers. There's tons and tons of people coming into the system, and so we all need to take care of each other. And as far as the cream rising to the top that can help the other people, and train them. So what we're trying to do is we have like 3 people who Don has been mentoring, who are going to then take on a group of 6 or 8 people, which you could even join that group, because that will teach you on how to write these powerful writs like the habeas corpus that I think we're going to be probably relying on pretty heavily, because that's one that they always end up defaulting on, and it's very, very powerful. And it basically brings us right down to where we are as far as our fundamental principles and our rights. And so that's one that we want to get real good on. So we have some templates that we've put up, but we don't want people just running off and doing a template if you don't really understand the whole process of what it's supposed to look like and why it's supposed to work.
Well, you know, let me just address what you just said. I sent in a 2241. My son and his partner were pro per. Never gave jurisdiction to the courts. And of course, they were overrun and over. You know, the courts have the gray bars. They have the weapons. They have the mace. They have the marshals. They have everything on their side. The blue lights and the red lights. And so they got convicted. My son did 10 years. July 21st was 10 years. His partner's been in just a little over 10. And they wrote a beautiful 2241, which we submitted. Mm-hmm. Whether you use it or not, it was submitted along with the addendums to it. Everything was submitted, so and a copy of the transcript of the court case. So anybody that was writing that knew what they had to produce to put the paperwork together had a clear track to run on. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like it came from some attorney. It came from people who know how to write and know how to do stuff. And I'm willing to do that, any kind of that kind of stuff. I'm a little bit physically disabled from the neck down, but from the head up, I'm still able to do stuff.
Yeah, and much of what I do. And we need heads. We need heads right now, because look, once you learn that process, you're never going to forget it. And then your ability to impart it to others, because look, I'll be honest with you. Some people think they understand, but they only have a very outside grasp of the whole thing.
You know, we're like a cattle running around with a ring in our nose. People are losing rights every day. Every day you turn the news on. Do you know what the major news on the night today is? Is that we no longer have the Boy Scouts segregated from homosexuality. I mean, every day there's a right loss, not a privilege, but a right loss that happens, and people don't realize they even lose a right. They don't. The only exceptions now with the Boy Scouts is that if you're a religious organization, you don't have to have a capitulation with a homosexual person in your organization. But every day there's something that goes up that people are so immune that they don't know they've lost anything. So there's no, if you don't know it's gone, you don't miss it.
Well, that's true, and here's the problem. You know, look, at the biggest group in society right now is the baby boomers, which includes you and me. You're on one end, and I'm on the other end. The next group is that group of people who are the millennium, the children that are coming up. Now, you think about it. These children have been raised under the Patriot Act. As far as they know, that's what America's about.
Sure.
And look, it's up to us to give them that knowledge that we grew up with of freedom. The only reason we're still here is because I was raised with the idea that I was free, and I believed it, even if it was a lie, I believed it.
Sure.
And so because that's in my heart, and it's in your heart, and it's in people our age's heart, we're willing to die for that. But, you know, you go to the younger generation, they're not so sure they're willing to die for something they never experienced. Never had. It's up to us to mentor these people, and this is where, look at, once we get some people writing these habeas corpuses, one of the things that we need to do is we need to go into these, and we've had some young college students that are able to invite us into their campuses to give talks to start getting those college level kids onto the path of learning the civics and the Constitution. Let me tell you what, when you start teaching that, they're interested because these are ideas that they've never been given, and they're hungry for it.
But when you take a reality like my son, a nonviolent, a victimless crime, doing 25 years, 20 of those years on conspiracy to commit mail fraud, I have a 64 count indictment, all bank related. No banks showed up, but the government showed up and said you conspired to do something through the mails, and that's a 20-year tag, and that's what he's in there for. The reality is you can say it's the Patriot Act and all that, but let me tell you, with that collar, he's in Marion, Illinois, in the heaviest federal institution in a terrorist pod with a bunch of Muslims who are terrorists, and they put him there because he writes all the time to the courts, and they've suspended all of his rights so he can't get out to do the court work and so on and so forth. And that's ultimately what they're. He's not on the golf course like some white-collar criminals. He's in Marion, Illinois, in a special unit, communications unit, where he can't communicate with anybody. And that's reality. That's not the ethereal, that's just the Patriot Act. That Patriot Act can be used against you rather than for you. And there's no recourse. There's no recourse whatsoever. We have to fight it from the best way we can. And hopefully, we hope that fight comes to somebody like NLA.
Well, yeah, that's true. And right now, what you're experiencing with NLA is the growing pains of getting the renters off the ground. And so it's been taking a few more weeks. And then you get things like, you know, John getting sick. And the first papers that went out, John would like to look at them before they're mailed. And that's
sure.
Because look it, we want them perfect. Later on, you know, we'll have mentors that catch problems, and we can fix anything. But right now, your first impression is your best impression. So when we start filing paperwork, especially if we're going to get somebody out of jail on a habeas corpus that's been in there for 10 or 12 years, look at, they're not gonna let go easy on that. We're gonna have to nail their freaking socks right to the floor, which we have every ability to do. Because let me tell you something, they can't answer us. The only reason he's in there is because maybe he didn't understand the jurisdictional, and we didn't have the momentum like we do today to make that stick and take the judge and accuse him of felony rescue and put the judge on trial and go through each guy like we're doing today. So look, I'm fairly confident that once this paperwork goes through, they're not going to be able to answer it. They're going to default, and that's going to be when we get him released from jail. That's our hope anyway. And believe me, talking from some of the people who have contacted us, who are in different positions in the government, believe me, they know that the people are coming and that there's change coming. And they want to, and the guys that are the good guys, they want to stay on top of it. They want to catch this wave to try to, you know, save the country and save their jobs and not have a complete reset. Look, we don't want everything to fall apart, because, you know, you try to rebuild from scratch, you're going to have trouble. Let's just get back into the parameters that are there to begin with. Follow the Constitution and those simple fundamental principles. If there's no injured party, there's no crime. That is such an easy one that can empty prisons. It's not even funny. So, you know, and all we got to do is declare it in our paperwork and have enough people behind us that and enough judges fear us, they're going to go ahead and move, because they're going to fear for their own well-being as far as their jobs go and their prosperity, because we're going to be suing them. But anyway, you just stay tuned and don't be afraid to get on one of those committees, especially one of those writing committees, because very shortly we're going to have, I think, 3 or 4 teachers that are teaching it. And
have somebody contact me. Like I said, I'm pretty stationary, but I'm available 24/7. I don't have a computer, believe it or not. I do most of my work from an iPad and a tablet, but I get a lot of stuff done, and I'm still capable of doing stuff that needs to be done and getting stuff done. Have somebody contact me and say, you know, Dr. Johnson, look, we do. Here's what we want you to do. I'm pretty good at following instructions catch on.
I'll talk to IRT and some of the other ones. Because I know that they can use people. Look at John needs somebody to be an organizing secretary right now. Because he's chief cook and bottle washer, you know what I mean? And so he needs somebody to keep some of those paperwork so that he can concentrate on the more important thing, like where the rubber meets the road,
Sure.
And these papers need to be filed tonight. You know what I mean?
Well, you got my name and number there. You got everything you need to know about me. Like I said, I'm ready, available. I got 6 other people, 1 in Hawaii, 2 in Arizona, 1 in Oregon, 3 more here in California. We got people ready to go to do stuff that we've been pumping NLA up for. Get us hooked in.
How about this? How about I have one of the guys that know the system get on the phone with you and sign these 6 people up with you. If there's a problem getting in, we'll figure out what it is. It shouldn't be.
Okay.
We get you on the phone and get them on the phone,
exactly,
and go through it, that will help, because obviously there's a problem there.
Right.
Anyway, thank you, Fred.
Okay, God bless you guys. You're in our prayers. We'll be praying for John. Another thing, when John gets sick or anybody gets sick, let's put him on the prayer list. Let's have a prayer chain. I believe that prayer works.
Absolutely.
So let's get that taken care of as well. Let's not forget that Isaiah 54 says that no weapon formed against us is going to prosper, and that God's going to elevate us. And I believe that. Call me a fanatic, but remember that I may be a nut, but I'm screwed to the right bolt. Let's let that take its course too, because a lot of this isn't going to happen just by our doings. It's going to be happening if we have intervention by the Lord.
Well, most of it isn't, because it's David fighting Goliath for sure.
Amen. All right, God bless you. Thanks for the time.
Yep. Okay, I have Gina. I don't know if you're open, though. Let me. There you go.
Hi, Gerard. Could you hear me?
Yes, Gina, I can.
Hi, and everyone on the call, how are you doing? I just wanted to announce that we have a special guest. I'm hoping that she's here, the young lady who had came in from Pennsylvania and was pulled over, and then, you know, the whole thing about the Second Amendment. Now she's fighting that, and she had got a pardon from Governor Christie. So I invited her to the Monday Night National Conference call. And hopefully she's in the queue right now, and I, you know, would like for you to call on her. You know, if you see her name, it's Shanine Allen.
Shanine Allen? Okay.
Yeah, so if you see her name, please call on her. Thank you. That's
thank
it.
Thank you very much, Gina.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Okay. Connecticut Ed, you're on the air. Hello, Ed. Unmute yourself.
Thank you. Yeah, I had an extra mute on there.
Yeah. I do the same thing. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I see you got your hands full tonight. But I agree with everything you're saying here tonight. With getting things right, especially in the beginning, you know, it's so important. Because
that's right.
So that's right on point. But what I wanted to ask you, and then maybe other people, you know, as the night goes on, you know, might be able to give some information too on this. It's about, you know, people that are losing their homes for taxes. You know, imagine they take some 20, 30 years to actually own your home, and then they're just going to lose it on you know, a small amount of taxes. And I know, you know, all this is going to come together eventually, but it's like here these people are just in trouble, you know, right now. And I was just wondering, since they're going to court anyway, is there anything they could just simply say as far as a jurisdiction issue and things like that?
Let me tell you something. The property taxes and the mechanism that they use to go after them is totally illegal. They go after your house in rem. Now, that's not due process. In rem is something you go after a pirate ship when the pirates abandon it, and you grab it, and you assume that it's yours because it was ill-gotten. So, you know, they're going in rem, which means you don't get any due process at all. You could fight the land tax just on that process. And John is talking about doing, again, this is another thing on top of everything else, that we should be doing, well, number one, foreclosures with the bank foreclosures. But the taxes is a big issue. Look, during the last Depression, a lot of people were back on their taxes. And it came to a point where at least we had good sheriffs, and they refused to foreclose on people for taxes, because look at, the government shouldn't be kicking families out of their house because they owe taxes, and certainly not property taxes. Like you said, you work your whole life, and then they're going to tax your house away from you, and you're going to lose a house for a couple thousand dollars in tax that you couldn't afford to pay, which they shouldn't be taking anyway, because, you know, the trouble with property taxes, you know, if you have to pay tax on your property, then it's like you don't even own it. You know, other states don't have a property tax. Some states do it through sales tax. They can get their school and stuff, and everybody that comes in that state, every time they go in a store and they buy something, food included, there's a small tax, and it gets spread out. But you see, your right of your first right is property rights, and your first piece of property is your body. But if you have no place to exercise that freedom, then you're not free. In other words, if I rent you a piece of property and I say, well, yeah, you can stay here, you know, you give me so much money. However, it comes with strings attached. No dogs, no music, no this, no that. Well, you're not free then, are you? You're paying for things, and there are certain rights that I'm taking away from you because it's really my property, not yours, right? So when the government says you have to pay these taxes, what they're saying is if you don't pay them, we're going to take your property away because we own it. I got a problem with that. So without a strict right to private property that cannot be taxed away, you're really not free. You don't have any security. You have no place to exercise your freedom, no place to park your butt in your computer and do research if you don't have a home, if you got a tent in the field because you're kicked out of your house. So the whole process is there is no due process with land tax. John and I started out on a case a couple of years ago. Some woman was losing her resort after being in the area for many, many years. And she got ill, and she ended up in the hospital, and there were other people involved, and the local legislators were involved. But they really, really beat her up pretty good. Because over here, what happens when you get behind on your taxes, the county, the county pays the town, and then the county becomes the debt collector, so to speak. And at some point in the procedure, the county buys the deed. They have like almost a secret sale, and they buy the deed. And the reason that they do that is so that when it finally comes time to put the property on the auction block and they sell it, and let's say you owed $4,000 or $5,000 worth of taxes, but they turn around and the bid went up to $100,000 on the property because it's really worth $200,000. Guess what? The county keeps the overage, which is so illegal. I don't know how they ever let them do that. You know, like they're in the business of real estate. So they have an incentive to foreclose on you and sell your property, especially when it's only $4,000 or $5,000 in back taxes. And so this is a game that they're playing. And yes, I think that a show cause that they need to answer on due process and this whole in rem thing. I don't know what state you're in, because some states are judicial foreclosures and some of them are not. But and there's a slight difference between states depending on what methods that they use to foreclose. But
right. This is a judicial state on Connecticut.
Right. So is New York. So is New York. A lot of them are. So, and actually, in a judicial state, I think you could do more. You know what I mean? I think you can hold their feet to the fire with the due process more, you know? So yeah. We need to discuss that, and we need to think about that. And it has to happen. What I was going to say, in the last Depression, they stopped they gave people, they stopped the taxes because it was getting ridiculous, you know?
Interesting. So, right. See, that's consistent, really. What's happened with the beginning of the foreclosure as far as, say, 2008 and 2009, when it really started getting ridiculous, they started changing. They actually saw it was happening too fast, and they actually came up with the modifications and things. So, in other words, they actually put things in place to slow it down, just like what you're saying, what they did in the Depression, that they actually held off. But see, this is what's happening with all this kind of things that they're doing, but they do it like way too late after so much damage is done already. And I predict the same thing will happen with the taxes. Right, they'll probably start stepping up to the plate, but then how many people will be losing their houses before they initiate that?
Yeah, you need to put paperwork in that they can't answer before that. And it's not that hard. It's not that hard to do, you know, to get them stymied with some paperwork. I would say at this point, even if you don't have it all figured out, the thing is you learn the due process. Look, they have to answer. So when you send them something, they have to answer. And if they don't, then they default. And that's a very easy process to learn when they don't answer. You know, that's how you take them out. And then once they don't answer, and once you get a decision that they've defaulted, then you give them a cease and desist. And guess what? They can't go back and ever collect taxes from you. That in my mind, that essentially removes the property from the tax rolls. And they're not going to be very happy about that, to say the least. Because you know, the town and the county are going to have to figure out some kind of new revenue besides land tax. You know, I want to say another thing. I don't want to get too long-winded here, but I think this is important. You know, originally in this country, the way it was set up, and it was a little bit discriminatory, but the only people who could vote were the landowners. And now what that meant was, if you know, and who were the landowners? It was the men, because women didn't have women's suffrage right yet, right? So you have this property tax, but all those males could vote. And they had a control over that tax because they were the only ones who could vote. If you weren't a property owner, you didn't vote. So you had taxation with representation. But that's long dead now. You know, they set up property taxes, but they had control over them, and they had representation. We have no control. We have no representation. Basically, what we have is we have taxation without representation. They should not be able to tax our property away. You know, maybe they were willing to give up that right and have their property taxed because they were getting a special voting right. Well, now everybody votes, even illegal aliens. So as far as being a property owner, you're a fool to be a property owner. You're paying all that tax and everything. You got liability if somebody gets hurt on your property, and you're paying them tax besides. You know, so, you know, there really is a good argument there that they're taking money and you're not being represented how they spend it. You have no control over it. And so we need to get rid of it. It's an evil, evil thing that they can tax your property away from you. So, but, you know.
No, that's excellent. No, those are very good points, Gerard. And that falls to suit almost like what's happening with even, and I'll just show you, this is just a parallel just to get the point, but I'm not going off the subject. It's just like with the blight. They're realizing, even themselves, they're realizing that it's too barbaric. Because a blight, as you know, they charge you $100 to $250 a day. They actually have legislation going in now to limit how much they can actually assess and put a 25% cap where before, it would be unlimited. You know, if your house was worth $200, they could just blight you all the way up and fine you up to $200,000. You see, so they're actually seeing how ridiculous they are, and that's what will probably happen with the taxes. But what would you say, just somehow to put some monkey wrench in there? I mean, as far as the jurisdiction, even like as far as it is not even the proper court, and that there should be a jury. Something like that, just something to put in there just to buy time until we can refine it.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You should file the paperwork, because if you file it under like a habeas corpus of no due process that they're violating, see, because the minute they take control of that deed, they violated an unalienable right of due process. Now you file that in federal court, they're done. They're stuck. You got to get a, you know, what you do is you take that county attorney and that judge and everybody in that county and you sue them in the federal court. You see, you can't just file the case. You have to go after them personally. And that's what makes them want to fix you. And I wanted to say something, too. You know, the banks got lackadaisical on the foreclosures because they had to. You know, the law says that if you haven't paid your loan in so much time they're supposed to foreclose. And the reason that the law says that is because these banks are getting money from the Federal Reserve. And when they get a loan that goes belly up, the Federal Reserve makes them take 10 times that amount out of their coffers and set it aside for a bad loan because they lent out 10 times the money they had to give that loan out, right? So as people started defaulting, the banks were unable to loan money. So what happened is they started illegally letting the people squat in the homes, and they didn't foreclose on them because they didn't want them on the foreclosure rolls. And they started that illegally because the Federal Reserve wanted to know which banks were in trouble. Well, if you got somebody not paying their mortgage and you're not foreclosing, and you're not telling the government that you're not foreclosing, you're on thin ice and you're lying about it, right?
Right.
So that's why they ended up doing some relief there, because it was affecting their ability to make money. That's what it was about. It was affecting their ability to loan money. And they didn't want to, and also if they threw all those houses on the foreclosure list, guess what happens to the price of property when you do that?
Absolutely.
So they had all these considerations, and the government looked down and let them break the law and look the other way because they knew that it was necessary for the survival of the system to let that go through.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on that. There was a time, and this is real quick, there was a time that the banks were not allowed to sit on property, but now they are. And that's and exactly for the reason you mentioned, is because it would be too much inventory, and then the prices would just plummet. But let me ask you this before you go to the next caller. Is there anything on the site, the National Liberty Alliance site, that has any even simplest thing as far as, as far as the paperwork or anything?
Well, look, we have sample habeas corpuses that we filed. Now, those are kind of like templates, and we're going to put out templates that are a little bit more self-explanatory. Because, look, depending on whether you're doing it from the state or the federal, you have to change the way the language goes. That's all. You know what I mean? And depending, like we're doing habeas corpuses that come from the common law grand jury. If you do one yourself, you're going to do it from your court of record instead of the common law grand jury. You're going to ask yourself for permission in your court of record, and you're going to grant yourself the permission to do the habeas corpus. Because normally a judge will give permission for a habeas corpus, and you have to apply to the court to get that habeas corpus, and there's not a judge in the world that's going to give you a habeas corpus. They just don't want to do it. They know it's too powerful. So you have to grant yourself that right through your court. You have to open your court of record, file it, grant yourself the permission, and fill out the paperwork the way we have it online, but only not doing it from the perspective of the common law grand jury, but doing it from the perspective of the court of record. You understand?
Yeah, and
and instead of begging the court judge to give you the habeas corpus, you end up giving it to yourself in your own court of record. You know, if we had common law courts of record and you went to them, they would give you a habeas corpus on something like that because it's due process. You wouldn't be begging some judge for it. You know what I mean? You'd be begging a tribunal of jurors for it.
Right.
You know?
Exactly. Because that's the whole thing, Gerard. Everything when it comes to foreclosure is just a judge, and that goes against what would normally happen with a common law court, which would have a jury, and then they would be making a decision and not the judge.
Well, you know, look at the whole way that they do it is illegal. They don't notice you. You have no due process. You don't get to answer anything. You know, they just come in like thieves in the night and they take it in rem. You know, so it's like they're the pirates. They're the pirates stealing the ship, so to speak.
Well, thank you very much, Gerard. I'll get off, and I'm going to stay all the way to midnight in case somebody else has some information to share with that.
Okay.
And maybe I could, you know, pop on later or ask me to queue in, and I'll queue in at your request.
Well, listen, I'm very interested in the property tax thing because we have more than one person in the group close to me that's in that situation right now. So I'd like to see it resolved so that we all can have remedy there. Thank you, Ed.
Excellent. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Oregon, Sherry.
Hi, this is Sherry. How are you?
How are you doing?
Making sure to see if you can hear me, okay? I'm charging my phone in the car. Can you hear me? Am I too loud or too low?
No, you're good now. You were breaking
up.
All
right, great.
Now you're good, yep.
All right, great. I was just calling about the Frequently Asked Question Committee. Is there a meeting going on for directors at this time? Did it get rescheduled?
I don't know on the frequently asked question. I don't know.
Gerard?
Yes.
May I?
Yes, you may.
Yeah. Hi, this is Gary. I'm the national coordinator, and we are revamping all of the committees. We are going to be allowing people to enroll in the committees on their own. Right now, sometimes somebody jumps in to take lead of a committee, then find out that they bit off a little bit more than they can chew. The leaders sometimes fall off. They step aside. They don't tell anybody. With this method that I'm going to be, or we are going to be employing, it's going to be that the committees are going to be able to self-govern. So if a committee was meeting and then now they're not, there'll be a way to at least be able to report up through the chain of coordinators. And if you feel so inclined, for example, if in the fact, I'm not saying this is a fact, get it, you know, sorry, that if the leader of the fact committee stepped aside, and I'm totally being facetious, that's not a fact, then the committee could appoint a new leader. So we're going to try to give some autonomy and tools for these committees to use. Things like calendars, spreadsheets for tracking issues or projects, as well as their own private forum. So they don't have to worry about people spamming their forum with a bunch of non-related, non-relevant material. The committees are going to be much cleaner and neater and self-governing with any luck.
Okay, great. Well, I'm currently the director on the Frequently Asked Questions, and we've had a couple of meetings that got canceled with John, and I know he's sick now. And so anyways, I was turning in the FAQ committee reports, but I wasn't sure what was going on, and I wanted to get some of the questions we had, the FAQs, up on the site if possible. And we're currently working on a list. We have about 50 questions and answers, and we're trying to look at them and revise them and get them shorter, because at this time there's nothing up there. So
right.
I'm just kind of checking in to see kind of what I'm supposed to be doing and to see how to get things, you know, up and running for our committee.
Actually, here's some good news. We have an incredibly well-oiled machine of the combination or the joining of the investigative response team and the Common Law Advisory Committee, and we may want to take the bulk of what can be done off of John's shoulders. We bring John back in for the questions that we cannot answer, and that might help streamline things. So we may need to find somebody in IRT, like I was thinking, somebody like Don Schiavone, who could step in and start filling in the gaps.
Okay. Yeah, I took the director position just because John had asked during one of the calls, and I said, well, I'll step in and do it. Now, that's not exactly where my heart is. I was trying to fill in to get some questions up there and to get things going. I'm more working with Gina and Sheila in the CPS cases, and I have a background in counseling. And so that's where I want to be, but I do want to get the FAQ, you know, going, and then if someone at some point wants to come in and take over, great. If not, it's pretty much going to be a committee that runs on its own anyways, because once you get stuff up there, you're just going to have to update or revise once in a while and add to, and it pretty much self-sustains, I would think.
Right, right. Well, I was kind of hoping to take the FAQ committee to the next level. And I was entertaining the combination of the welcoming committee with the FAQ. So the new people that join, they've usually got questions. And the welcoming committee may not be necessarily 100% up to speed on stuff. And the FAQ committee may not have the list of people who are joining that we can start bringing these people that have signed up. For example, let me just tell you something. When I'm registering the people that have signed up, or when I'm confirming their accounts, you'd be shocked. There's two things that come across. And I look at the people who register, and I look at their comments, their introduction and their comments. And sometimes you read some of the horrible stories of the people that are having CPS problems, or they're having tax problems, and people are joining for help. This is where we need one step slightly above welcoming, something slightly below IRT to get these people on the right track. This is what needs to be done, because when people are calling in and they're in pain, they want a Band-Aid right freaking now.
Yes, definitely.
They don't want to wait till the Monday night call.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to take it too much time, and you've been awesome at answering my questions. I just had one more thing that we talked about last night on the Sunday night CPS call, and it was a lot of people do need that help and someone to talk to about what they're going through. It's a very emotional and traumatic experience, all these things that people are going through right now with having their sovereign rights, you know, infringed upon. So with CPS specifically, what I was thinking and what we talked about last night was maybe making it so when we could get a group together, kind of a support group where someone could call in, but we want to make sure that they are part of the NLA, because we know that there are a bunch of people that come in, you know, wolves in sheep's clothing. And so if we have them sign some kind of the oath, the NLA oath, and I know that people can still pose, but it would still be taking those steps and, you know, within our power to make sure we're protecting ourselves, because people are just worried about people coming in and trying to, you know, get information on certain cases of CPS and different things. So that's kind of what we were wanting to present, as something like that, you know, encouraging people, let's have this group so that people can call in and help people along the way as they fill out their lawsuit paperwork. So I'm not sure if there's something like that that can happen, but I was thinking of putting something together if possible to encourage that and have an outline about it, you know, of what we can do.
Yeah, we'll take a look at this next rev of the phase one of the committees and find out if additional tools are required.
And what those tools are,
yeah.
Okay. Well, I won't take up any more time. Thank you for answering the questions. And there aren't any more meetings right now at this time. Will I get an email to let me know about what I need to do as the current director?
There's going to be an email. I'm going to be,
okay,
as we release the committees, we are going to publicize for people that have been emailing in that want to join them.
Okay.
And I'm going to be releasing the committees progressively. So that as they come out, the people can join. Now, for example, the people that are currently a member of CPS and currently a member of media, when the new committee comes out, they need to rejoin. That doesn't mean they're starting all over again or anything like that. I'm just saying that we've created dynamic registration for these groups so that people who want to join them can. Now, that doesn't mean when you select to join them, you're automatic. You may get a phone call. And you get vetted depending on the group you're going into. For example, if you are joining IRT, they're going to grill you like a cheeseburger.
Yeah. Okay. Now, does that go for directors and members are going to have to submit?
Everybody.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good. Thank you so much. Your name's Gary, right?
Well, good. That'll also be good, you know, cleaning the kitchen.
Yes. That will be great. I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much for all you guys are doing.
All right.
All right, thank you.
And that was Gary.
All right, thanks.
Okay.
Thanks, Gerard.
Yeah, and the other thing I wanted to say is, you know, people coming into CPS and some of these other things, we should talk about
if there's something that we can't file immediately to the court once we have our templates done and we know that we can do these habeas corpuses pretty quickly. I just want to throw this out there just as an idea. I don't know how viable it is, but I know that we had a couple of our members do this, and unintentionally it produced some good results. One of them had to do with the sheriff's department in my town, where when we went after them for filing an illegal warrant against this guy through family court, he did a notice and demand that each and every one of the deputies' house, the prosecutors, the judges, and all it was a preliminary notice and demand. It was nothing really, but all they knew is they got registered mail at their houses. Their wives were upset. I'll tell you what, they wouldn't even follow this guy. When they seen it was him, they would turn around and go the other way. As far as they were concerned, they got sued. And this other person, this woman, she put in a notice of tort. And as soon as they did that, they let her husband out of jail. They immediately panicked. So I'm wondering if we can't get something similar to a notice of tort. And something, especially as NLA becomes more notoriety, where we say, okay, we have this client that you have a hold of, and we're sending a notice of tort. We have intentions of filing paperwork in this case. That could maybe give them the relief they need up front, because they know they got an organization behind them that doesn't mess around now.
Yeah,
I think that would be wonderful, because the people who are calling, you know, they have court dates tomorrow. They have court dates next week. They have the TPR, you know, parent termination. And, you know, it's like, what do we do? Is what they're asking, and they're just waiting for that lawsuit to get filed. So something else would be awesome. I think that would put an ease on so many hearts, and it would help, you know, to remedy it for the, you know, before it's filed.
They could go into court and say, well, wait a minute. I have new counsel. I'm working with a group that works with CPS and due process violations, and I'm putting you on notice that I need time to do this. And any judge that doesn't give you time to do that, he's basically sealing his own fate, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. Say, no, and I didn't mean remedy. I meant, yeah, someone on your side to kind of help and to say, we're not in this by ourselves. And, you know, we need to have our sovereign rights upheld. And, you know, we're not just going to sit back. We're claiming our rights and we're going to defend them. So I think that would be awesome. That'd be great.
Right. So we should keep that in mind. And don't forget, there are people out there forming other groups besides NLA that are sick of this stuff, and they're banding together, and they're going after CPS. So believe me, they're feeling the pressure. So if they know that you're not going to sit down and roll over, it makes a big difference. So anyway, we'll move on. But I think we should work on some kind of a paper that we can get out right away announcing that you're seeking the counsel and working with a group through NLA for child, you know, CPS services for due process violations. And that should put a chill in there.
Sounds good. Okay. Let me know, because I'm willing to do any of that you guys need. I'm here to do all that work. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. Okay. We got Robert from Florida.
Jared.
Yay.
How you doing?
Good.
You can hear me anyway, right?
Yes, I can.
I got a couple quick questions. First, in reference to the conversations tonight already, you said something about that property tax thing being something like taking over an abandoned ship over in the sea. What did you call that?
It's in REM. R-E-M. In REM. That's an
admirable term. In R-E-M?
Right. In other words, you don't need to be there.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Okay,
it's almost like doing it ex parte. You know what I mean?
Right. See, I own my property, and I've been behind the taxes before. And what they do in Florida is they sell the tax deed to somebody else, and then that somebody else, you know, like a real estate agent.
Yeah.
They'll turn around and send you paperwork saying that you owe them the money.
Right.
Otherwise, they'll put a claim on your property. But anyway, next question. If we were to do a civil suit on a party and a judge rules against something in the suit or the whole entire suit, can we do a writ of error on that judge?
Absolutely. I mean, if he's violating your due process, absolutely. First of all, if you open a court of record, unless you're in an equity where you gave him permission to rule, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to be done with a jury, not with the judge. Did you get your jury trial? Was it over $20? After, you know, there's a process violation.
I wasn't really sure on that. But anyway, I want to get into a couple other things here now. I made a list of things, and these are just a couple of real quick questions. But I talked to Robert with the Sheriff's Committee about 2 days ago,
mm-hmm.
and I was kind of hashing this out because 1996 I ran for sheriff as an independent down here in Charlotte County. I was working as a deputy sheriff at the time, and I got to work all the way up until the election day, and then I had to, of course, resign, which I had to put in the resignation prior to.
Right.
My problem is now that I'm self-employed, I don't have that kind of income coming in. So if I was to run and go to petition method, I'd be spending more time trying to get petitions and not enough time putting food on my plate.
Right.
So my question would be, is this something that NLA would be willing to get people in my community that are on board with NLA to get the petitions for me or help me with those petitions?
Well, I'll tell you the truth. People in NLA, if you really need local people for petitions.
Well, I'm talking about local people who are also in NLA.
Absolutely. I mean, you should be able to look at. I keep telling people, if you don't have a common law, if you don't have a constitutional sheriff that believes in the common law, then get one to run on that. On that grounds, I think that's a very good ground to run. Hey, I'm the sheriff. I'm going to uphold the Constitution. You know what? If there's no in your party, there's no crime.
This is exactly what I plan on doing. If I do that,
so
well, but
you need
the biggest. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You need people to walk the election districts to get you on the ballot. I don't know where you live, but in some places it's more important to get on the Republican ballot, and other places it's more important to get on the Democrat ballot. Like over here. In my town, if you don't have the Republican ballot, you probably won't make it unless you got a lot of Republican friends that'll vote for you, even though
that's
you're
what it is here. That's
so,
what it is here.
So what you need to do, and look at, you only need 5% of the voting district. Or, well, I don't know on a candidate. I know for committee man to run for committee man, if you get 5% of the voting district, which is 5 out of 100 signatures, you're in as committee man. As far as balloting and to be put on the ballot, I don't know what the percentages are. You have to check with the Board of Elections. I don't think it's that hard to do, though.
Right. It was 2,500 last time I ran, so that's percentage of the registered voters.
Right.
But what do you feel about going back to a paper ballot box, though, instead of this automated bowl that can be manipulated?
You know, you're gonna have some fight on your hands, though. I mean, they're not going to do it just for you. But
No, I'm thinking, you know, if everybody in every single county in the state of Florida got with their county commissioners and sent it up to the state level saying, hey, look, we want to go, our county wants to do a paper ballot box, and we've got people that will volunteer to count it instead of depending on a computer which can be manipulated by the elite.
Yeah, I think it's great if you can pull it off. You know, they're going to give you a million reasons why they can't do it. You know, they have that. They have the electronic one that you write on the paper, and then the paper goes in the back. But I heard those can be manipulated also. So I don't know. You know, where they actually have a paper copy of the electronic vote because you black out the squares. Remember the test you used to take in school? You had to black the little circles out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do in my county. You take that sheet and you black it out, and then you put it through the machine, and the machine reads what you circled. And then that paper, which is the hard copy record of what you voted, goes in the back of the machine, which is supposed to be protected along with the rest of the count from the machine. And those two better jive up. Now, are they counting those when they're supposed to? I don't know what's going on in each individual county. You know, somebody's supposed to be watching that from both parties. I don't know if they do or they don't. But even though that's an electronic vote, there's a paper backup in the back of it, is what I'm telling you. So even though
I just have a hard time believing that people are voted in anymore. I think they're not elected. I think they're selected.
Well, it's harder on a local level to get away with that than it is on the national level. I hate to say it.
Because, look, on the national level,
the national level, they got some company in France that counts the votes, that wrote the computer algorithms for it and won't give it to us. So, you know, I mean, we talked to some guy today that was, he doesn't believe that they have that much room to fudge an election, but I think they got a lot more room than he thinks they do.
It struck me just the other day, and I called the local news media about this, too, because this is about, you know, all these people putting in their hat for the presidency, right? Mm-hmm. Where does it say anybody can put in for the presidency in a constitution like that? It doesn't. It says the electoral vote, which is the electoral that we are supposed to vote for, which we don't, our governors do now. But the electoral vote is supposed to select two people, one a member of the state and one a non-member of the state. And those two people, along with the other states, which would be 100 people, get put in the hat. And the highest that are the highest, the one that gets the most votes is the president, and the one gets second most is vice president.
Well, that's the way it used to be.
Well, that's in the Constitution. If we're going back to the Constitution,
That's right. That's the way it used to be, which I think is a good idea because you don't get this team. Yeah.
Yeah, Gerard, we're stroking on to 10 minutes here, and we have an extraordinarily record long queue.
All right. I'm going to go ahead, Robert. But those are things that we should think about, and certainly if you're going to run for sheriff, get anybody in L.A. around you and let them get their relatives that are not in L.A. and let them run your petitions. Absolutely.
Right.
And look at
I'm working on that with the Tea Party.
We can do announcements in L.A. I don't know how much it'll help you, how many people read our announcements in your community. But, you know, even though we don't get involved in political stuff, we could certainly say, hey, so-and-so is running for common law sheriff in his county. I think that's a great thing, and I don't see why we couldn't announce that. Anyway, I'm going to move on to the next guy. Thank you, Robert.
Good enough. Thank you, Derek.
Yep. Bye. Gary from Michigan.
Hi, Gary. This is Gary Don from Michigan. Just a real quick one. They announced several times over the national news that they're going to have foreign troops at Camp Grayling in Michigan. And for training processes, they mentioned the Poles, the Latvians, and several other. They kind of mumble-jumble that together. So I thought I'd pass that on to you so you could get that to the membership and let them know that this is they planning on doing it. It's coming up. So
did they give any numbers, or they were very vague on it?
No numbers. No. They just ramble it fast, hoping that you don't catch it all.
And Poles and Lafayettes and that, huh?
Right. The Latvians, and it mentioned several different countries that will be participating, but we know they've been doing that for years up at Camp Grayling. It's nothing brand new.
No, and that way they can turn around and say, you're just a bunch of, you know, chicken littles, the sky is falling. But let me tell you what else that we know. We also know that you're not going to get American soldiers to go house to house and take guns from people. You're going to have a certain number of foreign soldiers to carry out that dirty work.
I would agree 100%. I was in the United States military. I would agree 100% on that.
Yeah.
I think
so,
when push comes to shove, I think the Americans, you know, will still hang on to it. At least I pray they do. And by the way, you mentioned prayer. I think we should pray for John. I don't know his particular problem. I don't need to know. Our Father knows what the difficulties are, so I think we should put a big prayer in for John tonight.
Well, I appreciate that.
And
so
healing.
And this is a little bit of a wake-up call for John, too.
I'll be calling you. I had a couple of things that I was supposed to share back with you. Remember, I had the three trees that grow, and I have that information. I just never got back to you.
Right.
Yeah, so I'll get back with you personally on that. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay, thank you, Gary.
Bye-bye.
I appreciate it. Yeah.
Right.
Okay, we got Scott from South Carolina. Go ahead. You got the mic.
Hey, Doc. Thanks for having me. Can you hear me?
Yep.
I just have a few quick questions. One, I have a comment on the property tax.
Okay.
The research I've done basically says that, you know, we lost having property in Allodium, the title in Allodium, after the Civil War. Now you're listed by the state on your property that you bought and paid for as a tenant. So you're just a tenant on you're leasing the property from them, basically through your taxes. You have the right to buy it and build on it and do whatever you want to it, but you're still leasing it from the state. Nobody owns property anymore, unless you know, I think Texas is the only one that gives out titles of allodium, you know, allodial title. But I don't think any other state will, because the land is hawked. You know, they've taken all the land after the Civil War and restructured the loans that were put together in the Treaty of Paris with Benjamin Franklin, because the British had built up such infrastructure here and they wanted a payment for it. And it was agreed to. And Lincoln restructured that loan and put up all the land, the way I understand it, now the research I've done. And I have noticed that when I went on, you are listed as a tenant. That's the one I had. I did have a question that I asked the other night. Who would arrest a Supreme Court justice? Now, I went online, and I found one Supreme Court justice that had been arrested, Antonio Scalia, for trying to burn down the Supreme Court. And he was arrested by the Capitol Police. The federal marshals are sworn to protect the Supreme Court justices, so I didn't know how that would clash. So I guess it would be the Capitol Police, and to get them to, you know, support one of our writs might be like pulling hen's teeth. Another thing I had is I've talked to a lot of people that, you know, I told them we could probably help them with their problems and so forth and just contact us. And they went on the website, and they really can't find any way to contact anybody. That might be something to look at, you know, contact us and maybe have somebody or a group of people that might you know, scour those every day and try to get back with those people that are looking for justice in the courts. The last thing I had was what you were saying. I wanted to reiterate about that. What we're writing to the Supreme Court and all of these justices, all the federal judges and so forth, is historical documents. I mean, if this all pans out, this will be historical. I mean, it will go down in history. And I got to tell you, the writs that we've sent so far are full of spelling errors. And you know, myself and Linda even, Palmer even corrected them and sent them in, but I don't think they're getting to anybody because the same, I know you're cutting and pasting the footnotes because it's the same spelling errors, Magna Charta, Magna, you know, different things, Magna Carta.
It's in some of they're in the footnotes, huh?
Yes, a lot of them are. Now there were a couple in the regular writ to the Supreme Court that I noticed, but the last writ that we put in, I think to the I can't remember if it was to the sheriffs or to the judges, but it was the same way. It was, you know, full of those, and Linda made corrections and actually sent the new writ in with the corrections made. That's in Word, so you can take those footnotes and put them in the place of whatever footnotes you have because they are full of spelling errors. And to me, you know, when the Supreme Court justice sits there and reads that and sees those spelling errors and says, wow, these people don't really have it together too much. They can't even spell. You know, they don't even correct their papers. They don't have anybody editing them or you know, going back and looking over them. Anyway, that's my opinion, and that's pretty much all I got. I just, you know, I want to get off here because I know you have a long queue, but I thought I'd bring that up and you know, let everybody know what I found.
Right. Okay. We appreciate that. I just want to say, as far as what Lincoln did with the land and all that, that's all fraud. I mean, you see, you got to be able to file paperwork and call that all and call it what it is. You know, they call us residents, and a resident means you're temporarily there. They'll never list your their property as private, because if it was private, they wouldn't be able to tax it. And so I know there was a guy going around having the tax assessor telling them to list his land as private because it's not he's not a resident and he's not renting, and when the tax assessor says I can't because I can't tax you, then that's a lawsuit to that tax assessor. I don't know how well that's worked, but that's stuff that I've heard in the works. I just wanted to throw that out there.
You know how the government works. We're going to do it until somebody says stop.
That's right. That's right. So I appreciate that. And look, we got to start working on it because I for one, spend an awful lot of money on this property, and I'll be danged if I'm going to let them take it from me for taxes. Because, look, all they got to do is keep raising the taxes to the point, you know, as your income goes down, as the economy goes down and the money goes down, the taxes don't go down to match that. You know, so pretty soon we're all going to be out in the street looking for a place. We'll be living in tents. So we need to do something pretty quickly because I can see us all out in the streets soon. Anyway, thanks a lot for that. We'll move on to the next guy here.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Yep. New Hampshire, Richie, you got the mic. Go ahead.
Yeah, hey, Jerry. How you doing?
Good, good.
I got a comment and a suggestion.
Uh-huh.
Comment is simply about the 10th Amendment in the Constitution where it says the powers granted to the government, or not granted to the government, I'm sorry, are reserved to the state or the people.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that's the 10th Amendment anyway.
Yeah,
my question was, if we're asking the states via the counties to reinstate the common law grand juries and they deny that, doesn't it automatically revert to the people to do it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look at, you know, a lot is on the people's shoulders. That's what people don't realize. You know, when you... if you file a contempt of constitution act against the government, that's basically a citizen's arrest. There's no agency that takes care of contempt of constitution. That's the people getting together, making the charge, putting it in the court. They have to answer it. So just based on knowing that, I would say if we can file a contempt of constitution document in a court and they have to take it as real and they have to take it as true because it's going in as with a group of people, kind of like a tribunal, like the grand jury, why couldn't we do it elsewise? You know, the only reason you can't do it elsewise is because you get the judge in the court and the judge maybe has the county sheriff on his side, and that now they got the courts, they got the sheriffs, they got the guns. If they don't want to listen, next thing you know, you're in the paddy wagon. You know what I mean? So
yeah, no, I understand all of that.
So the other thing, look, we could do it if we had enough people, and put enough pressure on to where they felt like the people were going to get angry unless they did this, and you back it up with good paperwork, you know, where they realize you're not playing around.
Well, that's kind of my suggestion that I want to propose to everybody listening on the phone. I've been printing out all of them. Filings that basically NLA has been putting out or the grand jury's been putting out.
Mm-hmm.
I've got about 100 of them, and what I do is I give them to people and I ask them when they go to get a haircut, when they go to the doctors, the dentist, get their car fixed, wherever there's a waiting room.
Right.
Bring one of them and put them in there, because if we don't start putting pressure on these people, and by that I mean, you know, I want a judge to be out cooking a barbecue at his house, and his neighbor says, hey, I just heard this about you guys. What's up with this? That's the
right
kind of pressure we put on them. And if everybody does that, you don't have to go out of your way. When you go to the dentist, when you go to the doctors, leave it in the waiting room. Let them read it. Whoever's
right
going to read it is going to read it. If they throw it away, so you lost some papers.
Right.
Anyway, that's my suggestion. I know there's a lot of people on the phone, but I've been doing that. I'm also writing letters to everyone in the state telling them we want the common law grand jury reinstated, and keeping copies of that as proof that they've been asked by the people.
Right.
So I don't know when this is going to come to fruition, but at least that part of it's being documented.
Right.
If they don't adhere to the people's demands, screw them. They're not acting as a government for the people. Anyway, that's it. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Richie. We appreciate it. Okay. Okay, next one. I don't know if it didn't go. That's is that David?
Yeah, you're talking about Dave from Missouri?
Dave from Missouri, yes.
That would be me. I just wanted to make a comment on...
Oh, my gosh.
Dave?
Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Go ahead. You were inadvertently muted. That was my fault.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Start over.
Okay. I just wanted to tell you that I got a confirmation here that they're starting some classes on the court observers. Brad Parsons contacted us and said that they were going to have a class on August the 5th. He specified it probably at 9 o'clock, and he's going to be giving us some information how to get in contact by phone, just as we're doing right now on conference. And I just thought I'd throw that out there because some people are looking for different things, you know, to get involved in the organization. So it's for people that have signed up for court observers or whether they, you know, just they're interested in thinking that they're going to do it. So I'm certainly going to get involved in it myself.
Well, that's good. We appreciate that.
In fact, Gerard, Brad is the next person. Why don't you unmute him and he can speak now as well?
Yeah, I thought that was him. Brad. Are you there, Brad?
Oh,
hello.
Sister White.
Yeah.
We lost David.
Yeah, I don't know how that happened, but anyway.
No, he actually dropped off the call.
Okay.
No, I didn't.
No, David did.
No. This is Brad talking, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's fine. Go ahead, Brad.
All right. Yes, we're going to have a class on Wednesday the 5th, starting at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It's being taught by a lady by the name of J.P. Lewis, and she's been a court watcher for a long time. As a matter of fact, she's got apparently a website that says Court Watchers on it. And she's going to be giving...
That's actually PJ. It's PJ Stewart.
I knew that. I was just testing you, and you did good.
Yeah, thank you.
There you go. And we are extending an invitation to everybody in NLA to join into this. We are going to need court watchers, I believe, by the hundreds, by the thousands maybe, very quickly. I think this thing's going to catch on like wildfire once we get a couple of real good wins under our belt. And we're going to need a lot of people. And so I recommend everybody come to it. If you can, join the Court Watchers. Put yourself out there and do that. We're going to have also lessons or classes on how to write affidavits and things of that nature. So it should be very interesting. We're going to try to keep it short. The class is going to be about an hour long, and then we're going to have a question and answer period and just go from there. So we invite everybody out. Look forward to seeing you there on Wednesday the 5th at 9 p.m. on Eastern Standard Time, and I yield.
And if anybody wants to go check out who this instructor is, they can go to courtwatchers.com, and they're going to see somebody who is a veteran of years. So it's Court Watcher, www.thecourtwatcher.com.
Oh, The Court Watcher.
Yeah, sorry, I had that wrong.
Okay. And I want to reinforce what Brad said. Look, everybody should join the Court Watcher because human nature being what it is, what happens, we get people coming in, and right away they need Court Watchers. Look, if you're going to need Court Watchers, you should put your name in there so that you can be a Court Watcher, you know? You can't just have people running out to your court date and you're not going to anybody else. Plus, you need people in your local community. You know, people can't drive 6, 8, 10, 12 hours. So if you put in ahead of time, and get to know who's in the area, and you start going to some of these things. Plus, look, it's a good experience to go into court, too, and sit there and listen to some of the stuff that goes on so that, you know, if you're a normal, everyday American, you're going to end up in court because that's their goal for us, you know.
Yeah. So, oh, by the way, PJ is only a couple people down in the queue if you want to add her into this call.
Yeah, every time I do that, it screws up.
Yeah, just don't screw up on Lady PJ, please. I think David had a connection problem to begin with. We were losing him here and
Lady
there.
Lady PJ from Hawaii? Is that
Yeah,
her?
Lady yes. PJ from Hawaii. Even though she's got beautiful weather, don't hold it against her.
Yeah.
Hi, this is Lady PJ Stewart, thecourtwatcher.com.
Hey, welcome,
hey.
Welcome. Glad to hear I have you.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we are teaching people that you don't need a bunch of people in your court. If you walk into your courtroom and you say to the judge, is there a jury here? Am I a public servant? And he says, no, we don't need no jury. And no, you're not a public servant. Then we say, we're here to impeach you because the only way you can hold this court without a jury present is for impeachment, and I'm unimpeachable, so we're impeaching you for doing it. You are to control your courtroom against tyranny and insurrection. We have a pink slip. We have you put the name on the of the judge that you're up against. On the top, you are your own court watcher, and that has to happen because they have kept us divided so that they can keep us from getting accountability in government. It's time to restore the order of law.
So how powerful is that? Now, look, there's an excellent tool that you've come across, and it's just one of the tools that our forefathers left us, you know, to get accountability back. Look, when you serve on a jury, you should know that you can rule on the law. They tell you you're only going to rule on the facts. That's a fallacy. So look at no jury, no due process. That's what our habeas corpus is about. That they violated us in our due process. And anytime they want to put you through something without a jury of your peers, without a grand jury indictment, which they do all the time, that's a violation of your unalienable rights, and you should be able to pursue that.
They shut down the whole entire second story of the U.S. District Court, so Frank and I could not arrest the judge on July 13th,
just a
few days ago. They shut the whole entire second floor down. There wasn't a courtroom in there that we could take our Title 18, Section 4. We didn't have to go before the judge they gave us. We could have gone before any judge.
Right. And they knew that.
They knew that.
Right. Well, what do they do next? I know when they know you're coming in and they know you're a fighter, what they used to do with us is they used to make a courtroom and a date when nobody else would be in there. Because they would lose control of the court when we were there.
The problem is that they're holding these secret hearings, which takes us back to Charles I, who was holding these secret hearings called Star Chambers. And what happened to Charles I? He was beheaded for tyranny.
No kidding.
Wonder if they'll let us
kidding.
Do that. Will they let us do that?
You know how I found out about it? Is I absolutely love Monty Python Sings. It's Oliver Cromwell.
And
you can look it up.
Had an effigy of Charles I, a picture of his head on a poster.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I don't remember. And Brian and I were doing Family Rights Radio, and we came across that, and we just started laughing. We never did finish that particular program because we kept laughing.
Well,
they
probably call that terrorism. If you brought something in of some king that lost his head, they say you're threatening the judge with losing his head, right?
Well, they've already tried all kinds of bad things to me. I've been charged for a 10-mile by 10-mile pot farm. when I was growing willow trees and moringa. I had pot lights. Come on, folks. I had pot lights in my laundry room. I was obviously growing pot, right? And I had a little sign in my bedroom that said, thank you, God, for my, no, I am grateful for my 10-mile by 10-mile pot farm. So guess what they did? They charged me for having a 10-mile by 10-mile pot farm. But they also took my child to force me to answer. So the first thing I did was fire the judge. Is there a jury here? No, ma'am, we don't need a jury. We're dismissing the case. You called me in to answer, and you kidnapped my kid. I'm charging you millions of dollars for that under Trezevant versus Tampa and under Macias versus Ide. No grand jury indictment. You cannot force me to answer.
Yeah, well, the average person doesn't understand that.
They don't understand it until it's in their face and they just lost their job.
Right.
I got that judge in Georgia. I've gotten several judges all along the state of California, from San Diego up through Roseville. That's not a problem. The problem is that there is no way that some of these states, like right now I'm teaching Hawaii a lesson, they'll never forget. They will never forget seeing the court watcher in gold spandex and a silk cape in their offices.
Oh, my goodness.
I wear a super outfit.
I love
it. It's not a real court. It's nothing more than going to a three-ring circus. So there's no way I'm going to dress in a three-piece suit and look like one of those bozos. I'm going to really look like a clown.
So, no way are you getting me in gold spandex.
Yep, me in gold spandex.
Well, they might leave the court when you come in. Who knows?
Oh, actually, I've had judges run from the bench.
Right.
I've had a judge in San Diego grab me, have his bailiff grab me, and instead of arresting me, I charged the judge for treason in open court in 1918. He had the bailiff haul me out by my wrist and put me outside the courtroom twice.
Mm.
Not arrest me. Didn't want me in their gulags. I would teach all of their people how to get out of their gulags. Because I stand on Constitution. I'm constitutionally constipated.
Right.
What is the one thing they swear to uphold and protect against all enemies? Only one thing.
Right. That's their
own. The Constitution.
Right.
The Constitution, the Constitution, Constitution. So what's enforceable when you're dealing with these guys? Statutory law? Rulings by a Supreme Court judge? How about USC codes? How about Federal Rules of Civil Procedure? What are those? Toilet paper. There
right.
is only one thing that is actually law when you're dealing with these courts. And if they hear anything outside of that, it's also unconstitutional. They have to hear it under the Constitution. The moment they start using UCC, the moment they start saying, well, it's our policy, it's our doctrine, we've always done this. Well, the Nuremberg defense didn't work against for the Nazis either.
Right. Yeah, they don't like that when you say that.
Oh, well.
I mentioned Nuremberg to a prosecutor, and he was not very happy. Oh, we don't say that stuff around here. I said, well,
I chased an FBI agent and a DA out of the San Diego U.S. District Court for a tax evader. He was teaching people that there was no 16th Amendment. It's the writ of attainder, and that the IRS agents don't work for the government. So they'd hauled him off to jail on a holiday weekend, so he was in for the whole holiday weekend. And Tuesday we had our habeas corpus in, and the FBI agent tried to chest butt me. And I leaned down after he growled and screamed at me how he was going to have me arrested. And I said, did you commit perjury and obstruct justice and commit treason in open court? DA grabbed the FBI agent by his tie, choking him, and ran the other direction away from me, straight into my partner, who was quoting the Constitution, so he didn't get any coffee from Starbucks that day either. It was a bad day for them.
Well, it sounds like we're in for a wild ride, so people, you know, get on board, because sounds like Lady PJ's got quite a roller coaster there for everybody, and that's good. That's what we're about, and that's what we want, and we appreciate that.
You've got to start training people how to stand up to these tyrants. They're not used to it. They have no idea how to handle me. None.
Right. Well, knowledge is a powerful thing.
The only way they know how to handle me is to keep me out of their gulags and their courtrooms, because I automatically impeach.
Right.
All right, Gerard, we're kind of going long here. We got a long queue.
Okay. Thank you very much.
But thank you, PJ.
You're welcome.
Okay. I'm trying to get Pebbles here. Hang on a minute. I got. Go ahead, Pebble. You are unmuted. Go ahead.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Good.
I've been taking notes all night, because that's just kind of how I do it. I got a couple of questions. And I just want to say, Lady PJ, you are my hero, honey. You're great. I'm trying to do the study for the grand jury administrator job, and I'm kind of reviewing the common law grand jury rules and the grand jury administrator duties in conjunction with the Magna Carta, so it's kind of complicated. But I would like to know, where am I supposed to get this budget filled that they gave, and where do I get 25 members for the grand jury? They have to be in jurisdiction. So, you know, those kind of are like my main questions.
Well, look, until we get in the court, we're not setting up grand juries. We're setting up administrators to pick the grand juries and to wade them when they come in. We're not actually right, and you're going to get them. You're going to get those 25 jurors from the exact same places that they get them—the phone book, the license, the car license, driver's license, registration type thing. They're just going to be picked random out of a county. And look at people. Also, some people will volunteer to serve in their community. You can volunteer to go on a jury or a grand jury. You can put your name in the hat. So
well,
they're going to go ahead.
I'm sorry. I also want to say thank you to NLA. My child was taken from me illegally 4 months ago. She's 15 years old. They violated 4 constitutional amendments, their own operating code, North Carolina state statutes. I got them on everything. The judges are in their pockets. They won't even look at it. They won't let me talk to my daughter. This institution y'all are starting here has given me something to focus on while I'm fighting them. I'm like, y'all have been helping me out. I'm getting rid of habeas corpus.
There you go. That's the answer for that.
They took my daughter. It's totally illegal, and they won't look at any of the evidence. They even ordered me to do a 10-panel hair follicle test, and I don't do anything. I've never been arrested for anything like that, or drugs or anything like that. So why are they cutting my hair and drug testing me? You know, it's just craziness. These people are so rude, and I really don't know what I'm going to do.
Well, you have to keep fighting them. Yeah, yeah. You got to get your habeas corpus finished and filed. And
Yeah, it's in the mail. I did everything and got it all notarized, and now I'm doing the civics course, and I was just told to start working on the grand jury administrator duties and educating myself to get there. And so it's giving me something to do, and I appreciate it.
Yeah,
I write speeches for Congress. They just a couple of them gotten through with Senator Grayson. Yeah.
Right. Well, that's good. So when you get yourself straightened out, you could help write for us if you can do that. That's good.
Oh yeah, so, I wrote my own writ. I just
Did I lose you? I don't hear you. What happened? I lost her somehow. I don't remember what her name was. I'm sorry about that. I don't know what happened, but you kind of like dropped off the call like we lost your phone. I'm going to open up Ronald from California.
Gerard, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I had to change for my earpiece because it doesn't work to... It works good to listen. What
right,
a night.
Right.
my gosh, I'm astonished with so many things. And Gary, your compassion showing, that was pretty awesome. I'm confused. I mean, I'm amazed and confused. These committees are certainly getting a lot of... tonight, and I think there's some pretty great things going on with them, and it makes me ask the question about, and then it's coming to where what you've been doing with the sheriff is the administration of getting four administrators in the courts, is that taking back seat now, or?
No, because look at everybody, we want four administrators per county to administer to the jury. And look, if we get into courts tomorrow or next week or next month, we're not going to have that. You know we're not going to have that. It's going slow. People aren't stepping up to the plate. And we need those four administrators to do. Look at all the work that's out there, just the stuff that we have. And you could multiply that, a million times. That's how much work there is out there. So... everybody should be working on getting administrators for their county. Probably what we're going to end up doing is we're going to end up sharing administrators in neighboring counties until we get things straightened out. You know what I mean? Look,
sure.
We're going to have to do whatever we have to do to get through. Now, once we get in a court, however we do it, regardless of what it is, I think what's going to happen is you'll have other good people stepping up to the plate. Look, at not everybody...
You're going to have a landslide flood.
Exactly, and not everybody in the courts is bad, and right now it's the snake eating its own tail. They're biting the people that are in the courts. We have people constantly coming to us that used to work in the courts. They took their kids away, this, that. It's really a blind justice. It's not justice at all. But this system is designed to make money, and what they've done is they don't even take care of themselves. There used to be that blue wall of silence with the cops and, you know, the prosecutors and the judges. Well, their system is starting to fall apart because it's feeding on itself. And what that's going to do is that's going to give us more people on our side because it's just gotten so far out of hand. But we're nowhere close to what we need as far as the logistical stuff. And I'm only just hoping that, like you said, there's a landslide and we have good people step up to the plate. And we want to kind of control it too, because we want to make sure that we get people – you know, that are going to operate under honor and justice and mercy. You know, look at these jobs as administrators, there's a salary. And, you know, one of the problems with the courts is there's money there. And that's what they get drunk on. You know, I mean, it's so bad. Every time a judge bangs his gavel, he gets money in his retirement account. We got to stop that crap.
Yeah, absolutely. So it takes a court administrator with the grand jury to do that, and then you start having to answer the people, and the people start having power. They start having recourse. Then you start having a system that starts writing itself, and you start to have this kind of thing happen. Then the people that are doing the bad thing, you start to realize, oh crap, we got to at least start the acting right until it comes their time and they get their day in court, so to speak. But you know, absolutely, I understand the logistics, and it is a quandary. I get it. My question becomes, referring to what Dave, California Dave, was talking about, the laser, you know, he's constantly on this laser focus thing, which is really very interesting, and you are trying to get a hold of the Utah sheriff, and also the California guy, but if it's the Utah guy first, you know, I was wondering, understand getting a hold of these sheriffs is not easy, and especially if they're, for whatever reason, how much of your focus is going there, part A, and this goes right into what you're talking about, is that if that were to come to fore and kind of fruition, and there became, some administrators put in Utah, say, for argument's sake, obviously not every state would have them, but that's the template. Then you have a controlled launch where you can start, you have, first of all, once that's done, if I understand it correctly, that opens the floodgate. Now the floodgate is controlled somewhat by itself in a way, because you've got to get a number of people in each county. Well, right now, like you said, we don't have it. So the ones that you do have, for instance, I count, just what's on the site, there's four administrators, not administrators, whatever they're called, they're in Orange County. There's a number of other people, us, that have taken the test and are ready to go, can have learn on the job, we learn to write, who already can write. It's a matter of getting the templates and going for it. You have people that are willing to do this. Then you get a few templates that are going, that are successful, and then the dominoes start falling. And the way things are right now, and Gary, you know, you're doing a great job. You only can interview so many people, but you can start interviewing these people and start training them, like these programs that are starting to train people to write, and then you have a controlled landslide as it stands right now, if this were to happen. So part of my question that I haven't asked is, how much time are you putting in getting that sheriff? And I've got to go fairly soon because I got to call Utah. I have that's a personal thing. But anyway,
I haven't been calling and calling. Look, I'm just like everybody else here, trying to with 6 million irons in the fire, you know, running my business, feeding my family, and then trying to remember to call this guy with a 3-hour difference. You know, it's. I suppose I could focus more on it. You know, it's like, it's, you know what it is?
Would you do a little bit of that, please? And if there's an email thing, if I can help you get an email address or fax
number? And look, we should also, like you said, is we should be getting people from out west there. I don't even care if they're in a neighboring state, but it certainly would be nice to have people in Utah that actually live in that county that would step up to the plate. Because it makes talking to this guy much, much more, valid in a certain sense.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Well, he's up in Provo.
I don't know that, you know, what he's like or anything else, or that he wants to talk to some Eastern New Yorker about.
So how about the fellow we got out that got out on the habeas corpus that was running for sheriff, but, you know, that recent thing? I mean, there must be some contact there, and he's definitely motivated. He wants to help, and he's in Utah, and he must know people. Isn't that an avenue worth
First of all, they got him locked down. I haven't talked to him, but, you know, as part, what they did was they had him sign in papers that he can't join any group. It's all illegal stuff. I mean, you know, he signed stuff while he was still in prison when they wouldn't let him talk to anybody. So he may be hesitant to actually step up to the plate, but he could go get people in his community and say, look, this is what we're doing next. And you know what? I dare say that if he steps up and starts doing something and they go after him, that's a perfect case for us to say, you better leave him alone.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
Oh my God, do you think maybe a habeas corpus could work a second time?
Yeah. Right. No, you're right. And so I've been hoping to get a hold of this guy in sort of a nonchalant way. I don't want to come in like a ton of bricks on his head. I don't know him. He doesn't know me. I'm cold calling him, and trying to do the best thing I can. And the other thing is, you know, we're running triage like an emergency room here. It's like you stop the bleeding here, you stop the bleeding. Yeah. Yes, I am distracted. You're right. And that's,
let me just suggest something. I understand that. You know, you're I feel your pain, Gerard. And let me just, before I forget, speaking of pain, I put you and John on a prayer list. And the other people who are talking about prayer lists, by all means, the more the merrier. That's a really awesome thing.
God will
put his light on us. He will strengthen us, guide us into the right kind of synchronicity of movement and stuff. But I think also, just my opinion, you know, don't be shy at the beginning when you're trying to prime a pump. You got to put a lot of effort in it. I'm not saying that should be your whole focus. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think your concerns are valid about the sheriff. But, you know, you got to get his attention. So once you get his attention, when you talk to Gerard is anything but pushy, but Gerard has damn good things to say. And I think he would listen to the content of what you have to say, and then you would find out where he's at. That intel right there, extremely valuable.
Right.
Then you know where to go.
Right.
And talk to this other guy who's had help from NLA, who's probably wanting to help, have some guidance, anything he can do. You do these in parallel. You've got a focus laser thing. You prime that pump. You get those administrators, let's say, optimistically, and you know, this is where we're going to go. You get them in a court. You've established that template. It doesn't have to completely happen in all across the country. Logistically, it can't. But there would be nothing stopping from populating things as these members, which right now the committees are just drawing in all these amazing people. And I was kind of conflicted about it, but I see it as a good thing. I just don't want to see it as a diversion that's stopping the main focus of what NLA is about. Please, and that's what my clarion is, don't forget that. And you've assured me that that's the case. But I see this as a tremendous opportunity.
Yeah, look, things are happening in spite of ourselves, okay? We're on God's timing, I believe that. And even though we tend to move in fits and starts, we've had some pretty amazing results in a very short time, and I expect that to continue. You know, it does seem that my prayers get answered before I even pray them anymore. So something's going on, you know?
That's pretty awesome, yeah.
So,
That's a powerful thing.
Yeah, exactly. So I appreciate what you're saying, and look, at everybody has to get motivated and stay focused. And so I'm sure when we get a hold of this guy, it'll be the right time. It should have been last week, but maybe it'll be 2 weeks from now. I don't know, but I'm certainly working on it, and we have other people on that committee that are reaching out too. And I would like to get some people who are out, you know, in that area to maybe do some recruiting there, and let's get some, because this is going to move fast when it goes. That's what I know is going to happen. Once we pull the trigger, that bullet's going to fly, baby.
I think that then, by virtue of what you said, if God's mind's working in this conversation, what you've just outlined is your time period to make contact with someone who primes the pump or is a catalyst. You'll be the catalyst to start getting those people. Maybe that's what God's waiting for, a net of people that are in Utah, that all of a sudden things will start going, because that's sort of the component in the equation that seems to be, if you look at our conversation, that seems to be missing. But it's there waiting to happen. It just needs to be kind of catalyzed.
I'll tell you one of the reasons it's slow out there is what I've run into out west, particularly in the mountainous states, is people don't have the communication we have. They don't have cell service. They don't have computers that work. You know what I mean? They're still out there, and it's hard to get things together when you're not communicating, when you have a lack of communication, you know, technology-wise. I've been trying to tell those people out there that they should all get ham radios. If they can't get, you know, a good internet where they can use Skype, then get a ham radio. You can talk on it all night, and you can make plans, and you can meet at courts, and, you know, I mean, that's just something that I'm hoping takes off. But
Well, you know what? That's a good point, because even I here, I can't pay for a Skype service, but I can use the free service, and I've had that before. But you know what? You make a good point, and I want to share something with you. The call I'm going to make to Utah is to a relative. He's got to go in for some surgery, interestingly enough, here shortly, and tomorrow's his day to go find out exactly when that happens. But, you know, he is not computer literate whatsoever. But let me tell you, he works with cattle, and his business, if he can't talk, if he can't use a phone, if he can't use and he's learning to use an iPhone, and his wife can do a computer, I'm going to get an email from her to get some communication going. The point is there are people that do that. You've got a Mormon community out there that knows how to communicate. They communicate in spite of everything, and people more and more are getting these user-friendly iPhones. That I don't know how much are out there, but I know they're out there. They're getting to use. They may not have the desktop like you and I are used to, and they may not have the email exactly or the Skype, but they communicate. I swear to you, they communicate.
And that's what we need. Don't
expect the form. Just go and catalyze some people. Get them going. They will take care of the form. They will communicate. I swear to God they will.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate that. I'm going to move on here because we got a few other, but, you know, that's a point to be made, and whatever anybody could do to build on that, I don't care what it is, but that is a problem, is the communication, and so somehow we got to get that hurdle over with out there, you know what I mean? You could do some alternative stuff, and I know we
talk
can.
Talk to who you know and let them figure out how.
Yeah, you're right. So thanks a lot, Ronald. Yep.
Take care.
Yep. Okay, well, let me see. I'm going to try to unmute Connecticut Crystal. Connecticut Crystal. You have the mic. Okay, Connecticut Crystal, you're open. Go ahead. It says you're open. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
There you go.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Okay. I'm talking about the talk for the TV. This coming week?
What's that? TV this coming week?
With John. About the foreclosures and the people's rights. As a matter of fact, I did receive... I'm a little tired here. I received another letter for the foreclosure. And I worked in that department in the taxes and all. And I had filed all the paperwork. Because what they've done, they had perpetrated themselves a fraud. So everything that they sent me, I sent them the letter back. And everyone, when they're doing the foreclosures, go to your local town hall, get the copies of your deeds. And most of the deeds, all of them have mortgage release. And when they were changing the mortgages, I was listening to one of the other callers breaking it down. When you buy a house or anything. Excuse me. Okay. You sign your name and everything, all the records and everything has to be recorded. What has happened to everyone? And I didn't understand what was going on, why so many people were losing their houses. So all of a sudden, they came at me. Well, I knew how to read the records, this and that. When I went and pulled all my records in, copies of my deeds and stuff. I said, oh my God, my mortgage has been released so many times. It was changed 5 or 6 times. And I had a problem back in 2006. And I think that was the first thing that came at me. And so they were calling me and telling me that they wanted to, they changed my house, they changed the mortgage and this and that, which I was in a fixed rate for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
Next thing I was in they put me in a 30-year variable. And every time I turned around, my mortgage was going up. So I was so stressed out, and I'm like, wait a second, because I said, who signed my name to change the mortgage?
There you go.
And I figured it out. So what I did, my attorney, I called him. I said, do me a favor, pull out my contract. So I went, and he goes, I can't understand why everybody's losing their home in this net. I said, oh, I figured it out. I said, they signed my name. They're perpetrating a fraud. Boom. It stopped.
Yeah, they're doing all that robo-signing. That's
right. They sent me, I guess, a release or what have you. All right? Unbeknownst to me, at this last time, and I started going through all my paperwork, I found the release. Not only did I find the release, I found all my mortgage deed release. So meanwhile, now they're still harassing me, and I received a letter last week stating that they are going to follow through with the foreclosure, and it's on a short calendar. Now, the letters I had written them, pretend they wrote, every time they send me a letter for the foreclosure, I said, please, first, before all this started, I said, can I have a copy of my deed and my contract? So they send me the contract, which was to another company. And so I called them back. I said, can I please have my contract with you? So, and I said, and what is your name? So I got their name. They sent me another contract. Now, this time it was with their heading on it. And on it, on the letter, it had total payoff balance. Payoff balance was $2,000. Amount due. No. Amount due. The same amount, $2,000. Interest due, $2,000-something. And then it has principal balance due. You wrote $109,000. As I said, I was born at night. I wasn't born last night. How did you get $2,000 out of $109,000? So this was, and of course they signed off on it. And I'm like, okay, this was so hilarious. Now that letter came in July of 2014. This past November, and look at your dates, everyone. November 13th of this past year, 2014. They added their name on my deed. And the next week, they put me in foreclosure. All righty. Pay attention to all your deeds. Go to your, get your volume page and your, and you can get that in your town clerk's office or whatever, on your property. And get the total disclosure from the time you purchased the property up until now. You know, and then they have the WPCA and all this other stuff. Well, they make up all these crazy taxes.
Well, listen.
Yes.
We're starting a committee for foreclosure. You should make sure you sign up in there with your experience.
Yeah, well, I did that work. And see, I'm very knowledgeable with the banking, and I'm also very knowledgeable with the tax law because I did that work for 40-something years.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to, you know, I had to record all those records, you know.
Well, but we appreciate that. That's good. Look, I'm going to move on, Crystal. I'd love to stay and talk some more about it.
Yep. Gary, for this coming, if John is sick.
I'm here.
Oh, is John Gerard on tonight?
No,
Gerard is on. But you mentioned my name.
Yeah, okay, Kirio, call me in the morning about the TV show.
All right.
Okay?
All right.
All right, Connecticut. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you, Crystal. We appreciate that. Yeah.
It's PJ Stewart.
Yes, what happened? Are you unmuted?
I was on mute. Apparently, it took me off mute.
Oh well, I guess I still had you in the queue. I'm gonna go to Pennsylvania, Mary. Okay. I said I was, but now I'm on Ollie from Colorado. I don't know.
Hey, Gerard, good talking to you.
Hey, Ollie.
When Gary gets my ballot of mail, I'll be on the sheriff's committee. Now, I did have a milestone today. I got my local sheriff to call me on the phone. We had a very awesome conversation. One thing to keep in mind, these sheriffs that we want to contact, 90% of their time is politicking and bucking the system. Now, this sheriff, I didn't hit him with too much NLA stuff, you know, just about the common law grand jury. But I asked him, I says, did you read any of the material that we sent out to you? And he laughed, and he says, well, let me tell you what. He says, I got a stack of papers 4 feet high. I don't have time to read it. So I said, well, that's how we need to get talk to you. And we're going to have a meeting, but he said he can't have it till late September. Now, here's the thing. I was friends with him on Facebook for several months, and, you know, eight months ago, he was on, he made a Fox interview, and, you know, I aimed him and said, good going, Sheriff. This old vet's supporting you. He's behind you, you know. And so when I called him today, we were on common ground. So what I'm trying to say is anybody's trying to get hold of the local sheriff, if you can find them on Facebook or Twitter, you'll know what their issues are and what they're fighting. Now, here's the important thing. If you go on the map and draw a line from North Dakota to New Mexico, and you take those states and all the states to the west, they're in an organization called the Western States Sheriff's Association. You Google Western Sheriffs, you'll wind up on westernsheriffs.org. Now, if you'll spend some time on there, there's contact information. They've got the sheriff's websites. And when you contact sheriff, you'll be able to talk their language. The Utah situation, I haven't checked on it, but if you can find any sheriffs in Utah that's in Western Sheriffs, you got them halfway on board already.
Right. Well, Ollie, I dropped off the call, had to dial back in, so I missed half of what you said. I just got back in here. My Skype went down, but.
Okay, yeah, well, what I was saying, I was talking about the Western State Sheriff's Association. I was trying to explain that the sheriffs out here, see, it's a different situation out here. They got issues out here with the Forest Service and illegal immigration. If they got a jail full of illegals, they're broke. You know what I mean?
Right, right.
But for anybody out here in the Western States, go on that website, you know, and spend time on it. Read the they got a board of directors, the reps and committees, news and bylaws, sheriff websites, training and solution providers. But just spend some time on there, and like I say, when you finally talk to your sheriff, you'll be able to talk his language.
Right, right. Yeah, because they have different issues, no doubt about it, from over here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to tell you, it's in a certain sense, it's easier for a sheriff to kick the federal government out of his state than it is for a sheriff to go in his county and uphold the Constitution in his county against the local judge.
Yeah.
Because everybody expects the sheriff to kick the federal government out of the county.
Yeah.
You know, Sheriff Mack won the law case, but nobody wants that Republican sheriff to arrest that Republican judge. The party really has conniptions when that happens.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what you're up against. But look, it's getting down to brass tacks. I wanted to bring something else forward with this business of all these troops and this Jade Helm and all this stuff. You know, as things get worse, the sheriffs have to step up to the plate, but also look at these guys that are in these police departments and in the services and stuff. You know, they have to protect their families. What are they going to, you know, who's protecting their families when they're out there doing this work?
Yeah.
You know, that's a consideration. And I really believe that that's why they're going to end up, you know, using foreign troops or UN troops and stuff, because I can't see the American troops or even the American police departments going with this. I know we got a lot of gung-ho stuff going on and there's some brutality, you know, out there with the police, but ultimately they all have families. They all got mothers and fathers and sisters and brothers, and at some point when things get bad, they're going to be worried about them, you know.
Yeah.
So they got to understand that they we all need to be on the same side here, that they got to stop the crap. We got a common enemy, and they need to start getting on board with straightening this out.
Well, last Sunday, Max, one of the Colorado directors, we went to a 3% United Patriots picnic up here. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you what, it's sort of an eye-opener for me. We found out, you know, all you hear about is their military training. They've got these projects going. They're filling VFWs up full of food, and they're doing this and that. In fact, I talked to our sheriff about the militias here, too. And I'm letting him know that there are organizations here, the militias behind him and whatnot. And it's just a matter of unifying, you know, and getting things going. But let me tell you about, I was in the 60s. When I was in the 60s, it dawned on me that the American government, they'd leave you stranded out at sea or in some foreign land. They'd leave you stranded. Plus, I found out that there was no public support. And I'll tell you what, for a young military man, that is devastating. Now, these guys in the active military, they know what's going on as returning vets. They know they don't have government support. And if they're out there in the public and they think that they don't have public support, I'll tell you what, it'd be absolutely devastating for them. We've got to support them, but we've got to let them know it's a militia and everybody, all the public is behind them. And then we've got to keep them on our side. You know, we've got to keep them in the constitutional frame of mind. But anyway, you got a long queue, but I'm glad I got in. I just wanted to let everybody know about that, the Western Sheriffs, and you'd get on there, and especially if you live out here, and learn who's in that, and those are the ones we want to contact.
Right. So keep that dialogue open. It's very important. And thanks a lot, Ollie. We appreciate that.
You bet. Have a good one.
You too. Okay. California Vivian, you are open.
Hi, everybody. I have just one question. I'm very interested in this court watcher. I went on courtwatcher.com, and there was a lot of sites that nothing of the sort to teach or anything. How can I contact P.J. Stewart?
Well, it wasn't courtwatcher.com. It was something different. Well, I forget what it was, Gary.
It was thecourtwatcher.com.
Yeah.
Come to the training that was announced.
When is the training and what time and how do I get there?
There'll be another notice going out.
In your email. And
So you're sending an email with all the information?
Right, and PJ's teaching it, so that's how you get a hold of her.
Okay.
Okay.
That's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Bye. Okay. Griff Ongers, it says. I don't know. 4480. Griff Ongers.
Hey, hello. Can you hear me now?
Yes,
I had to unmute. Eugene from Utah. Earlier, someone mentioned about Aloidal land patents, and he got the facts wrong. I do them all the time. And so I just want to make a statement and then a mention a little bit about Utah since we're here in Stephen Dean. But anybody in America can file for an Aloidal land patent. They've been granted since the United States has started. You just have to go to the BLM, take your property description, and then you submit that, and they will do the research for about $5, and you ask for your the land patent that covers that property, and then you bring it up, just the part that you own, because usually the land patents were given in 360-acre tracts or 100-acre tracts, whatever the pioneers did it. Now, if there has never been a land patent or an Aloidal title on your land, you can apply to one, and they're signed by the president. I mean, I wouldn't want one signed by Obama, but they're available.
I'd take one from Obama just to get it.
Well, that's true. And once your land is Aloidally owned, you take your documents, you file them, and 90 days after filing all the documents to update it, you get if no one can test it in 90 days, that property is yours. period. You're no longer part of the United States. That is your kingdom. That's part of what our founding fathers did. So every man is a king, or we make ourselves voluntarily associates with the United States in our kingdom. But that land, you make sure, is forever after filed as personal property. If they file it as anything else, they can tax it. But once it's filed to you, personal property, no one can touch it, because according to the Alloydal patent, the only person that owns it above the one that the patent is granted to is God himself. Anyway, on that note,
well,
I do.
Well, out of curiosity, who are you?
I'm Eugene from Iron County, Utah.
Okay, are you a member?
Yes.
Oh, okay, because I have you listed as unknown, and I don't like the sound of it anymore. I'd like to clarify that.
Well, 2 weeks ago, you asked me, and I told you.
And I remember doing that, but there was a little glitch in my webpage. What is your name and state again?
Eugene. Utah, Iron County, Utah.
Okay, good enough for me. Please continue.
Good information.
Yeah, I do land patents all the time. I've done them for 5-6 years. I've done a few hundred. And once you do that, even the IRS, nobody can touch you. That land is yours, indisputably. In fact, there are over 500-600 rulings from the Supreme Court since the 1700s. It's the one thing that has never been turned over, period. It's so strong, they can't touch it.
I think we should give Obama hand cramps for signing these things.
Yep.
I'm telling you, I want one with his name on it, just for prosperity's sake, if nothing else.
But it's a treaty that has to be signed by the president himself, unless in Utah's, when they made Utah state, they gave so much of the state to the state as school property that they could sell and pay for their schools.
Mm-hmm.
And that trust property can be signed by the governor. But other than that, it has to be signed by the president himself, granting title of the land to the person.
Now, let me ask you, is it any different in the Northeast here where the 13 is original colonies? I heard that they got the patents over here locked down tighter than the ones out west.
Because the Alloydal land patents on the original 13 states go back to King George.
Right.
And so, but it will go to not the president, but to the original state congresses that signed the Constitution. And there are a little more hoops to jump through, but they're not that hard. All you have to do is bring it forward. Just find your property, and all those states guaranteed are all patented up. So you can get one that predates the United States. And
right.
So that's even stronger. Here in from Utah to California, we have the Treaty of I can't think of it now. They did a movie with a horse called that name. But anyway, it was a treaty that the Western United States was acquired from Mexico. And you tie into that treaty before it was the United States, and there's nothing a state, government, anybody can do. In fact, there's been a few land disputes in San Diego over because the water had changed boundaries in the ocean and some of the rivers, but it still included the original Spanish land patent, and the person won against the state, multi-million-dollar loss. So,
no kidding.
Land patent is available. It's called an Alloydal land grant originally, but in America they changed it once the Constitution was signed to a land patent. Once you hold that, no one is above that property but God and yourself. Now, I want to keep it brief, so that's that. Stephen Dean, they have asked me to be state coordinator, but nothing's gone through yet. Stephen has been forbidden to interact with people, and it is – so he's hanging back. He's got some contact with us as much as he can, and he wants everybody to know he's still with us. And here we've done this last week – we had a grand jury meeting, and we are submitting some paperwork before federal court. And it's some quo warrantos, writs of error going in this week on behalf of not the one the NLA is doing, but while Stephen was in court, I mean in jail, he had his own court case going. And the judges refused to let him into federal court to attend his own court case. And so the judge ruled against him, and because he was not in the courtroom. Of course, the judge knew he was under federal detention, and the judge could have said, okay, bring him into the courtroom, but no, they didn't. They kept him out of the courtroom and then ruled because he failed to show up. His case was thrown out of court. So we're going after them for that.
Imagine that. Well, you know, we're not done with him. The presentments are going in on those judges.
Well, this is another judge on another case, but yes, we realize that.
Right, on those ones. And look, at until they got to take all that off of him, that's baloney.
That's true.
We're not going to put up with any of that crap. But anyway, that's coming. It's all we're going to have a landslide of stuff that hits the target at the same time here. But,
yes, because we're filing the quo warranto this week, giving them 5 days, and if they don't answer, then we're going to hit them with writs of error. Something that has surprised me, that's a little bit of a side note, but same thing, and is when the Supreme Court filed what they did a couple of weeks ago, John mentioned in a week or so ago, yeah, maybe we should have hit them with that. But, you know, there's the writ of attainder. That is forbidden in the Constitution for the government. But everything not given to the government is reserved to the states and the people. And
right.
So the people have every right to file writs of attainder. We are working on the judge. In fact, I will be talking to the judge in Utah County. What we really need, though, is because the federal court is in Salt Lake County, is someone to stand up. Now, I heard Joe mention he was on the call. If you're listening, you don't get in the thing, but if you can see about contacting or finding people in the Salt Lake area, the members of the Utah Unified Grand Jury, People's Grand Jury, if they can start contacting those two judges, not judges, but sheriffs, and just not confrontationally, but politely doing it, because I'm personally going to be going up there in a week or two and talking with both of these sheriffs. And I've got a meeting with the sheriff down here in Iron County, and he seems to be on our side. But he's involved in a lawsuit now, and he wants to get out of it if possible. So I think that kind of softened him up. But anyway, that's what's going on here in Utah. And
there
I just want—I wanted to correct the information on Illoital land patents. I mean, I do that. I've done that, like I say, for years, and I know the process. And mostly it's through your BLM office, unless you're part of the original 13 colonies.
Right. Well, we appreciate that. And look, at any information, you can soften that sheriff up and give him my name and mention the name of us. I'd like to get on a call with him with a couple of people and just have some conversation to see where he's at.
I will strive to do that.
Yeah, and then, you know, and if you got a guy that's having some legal problems, maybe we can help him out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maybe we can go ahead and get rid of the case for him. But anyway, we'll talk. I don't want to hold everybody up, but that's all good stuff. I'm glad you came on. I'm glad.
Well, hey, Gerard, just one thing before Eugene drops.
Yeah.
Okay, I can help you with state coordinator. Can you give me a buzz? I'll get a hold of you, but would you consider being a committee chair for a committee on land patents, allodial title?
Yes, that's something I could easily do.
Yeah, because I know I'm going to get 100 phone calls before tomorrow morning.
Yeah, well, he's not kidding either.
I understand.
I'm not kidding.
It's a hot topic. The thing is, I charge roughly $175 to $200 to once I'll tell you what to do, where to go, And I only make $700 a month if I don't get any extra business.
Right.
And so anything that I make will go to doing my job in LA. And I'm not doing it, I don't do it, do the patent. What I do is I give you a perfect example based on your stuff, and you can choose to copy it, but I'm doing it as a teacher. I'm not doing it as a lawyer because I'm not one.
Right.
But if you're willing to, you know, I will educate you. I will show you what the land patent looks like. I will show you the successful ones. I will make one using your information that you can either copy or submit, but I'm doing it only as an instructor. And that's people
that's
understand
it. That's perfect.
But,
that's all we can ask.
We'll talk.
Yes. Okay. Fantastic.
Okay.
I would gladly do that. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Eugene. Appreciate it.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, good. New York, Sheila.
Hi, Gerard.
Hey,
hi, everybody.
Sheila, how you doing?
I'm good. I have a question regarding when you were talking about the property ownership and mortgages.
Right.
Isn't it that a fact that the Queen of England owns all of the property and you really never own your property, you just own your home? No American can own land. And also regarding mortgages, how do you deal with something when it's all fraudulent? I mean, no money has been passed or loaned, or the only time it's created is when you sign your name. So when you buy your home and you sign your name, that home, that money was created. So that's when your home was bought. And all these loans, mortgages, student loans, whatever, they're fraudulent. They're not real.
Well,
they're no more real.
You're right. You're absolutely right. But that's the emperor with no clothes, and they don't want to go there. And the thing is they've had people bring that up, and very few people win because the judges don't want to hear it. However, what they're doing out there, because they're so greedy and the snake is eating its tail, is they're selling mortgages, they're buying mortgages, they're all having a bunch of fun, making an orgy of money. And in the meantime, they're doing illegal stuff like signing people's names. There's no contract. There's so many things that they're doing wrong that you can get them on that you don't even have to go there. But you're right. You're right. The fact is that they get paid three times on any loan. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And when you default, they get paid three times. Because believe me, they sell that debt to somebody else. That's part of the debt.
Yeah, that's the interloper.
That's right.
Interloper that comes along and buys your loan that the bank has already created that money, and then they come along and say, okay, well, you made $18,000 on that loan, we want to buy it for $10,000, and they sell it to them for $10,000, and then they come after you for the full amount.
Well,
so
you know that they're never going to give us any kind of remedy there until we can come into the courts.
Of course.
They're never going to rule for us on that. However, when you go after them individually for committing fraud, for robo-signing, and you get criminal charges against them and you're suing them personally, that's what makes them let go. But this knowledge that you have of what they're doing with the money, when the average person finally, when that sinks into enough people, that's when it's going to stop. I mean, either that or when we get in the courts and we stop. You know, it's like, I think it was, I don't remember who it was. I don't know if it was Henry Ford, I think it was. He said if the people understood banking, they'd be out in the streets by morning rioting. If they knew what they were doing. Yeah, exactly. It's such a crazy thing. You know what it is? It really is the Wizard of Oz.
It is. You fall down the rabbit hole single day. It's really phenomenal. I don't want to hold you up, but I just wanted to, you know, put that in as far as even land. Like, you do not own your property. You cannot. I think it's a special title that you have to get, and you have to go through I don't know what.
Well, that would probably, that would only be in the original 13 colonies. I don't believe that that would extend to the treaties that were done.
Yeah, it is today. I mean, the only one, and she is, and what she owns is phenomenal. It's really basically for the whole world, but the queen of England.
If she thinks she owns my property, you tell her to get over here. I got a septic tank that needs cleaning.
I know. We know it's fraudulent, but that's the law, you know, that they have, that we cannot, we are not allowed to own property, that we can own the home, but you cannot own the land.
Let her tell us that. Let her tell us that like that. Look at when my when my parents bought a piece of property in Hawaii back in the 60s because my father was stationed there. And so it must have been like, I don't know, 61 or 2 or something like that. And they bought a house for like $15,000 in Waikiki. And that was, I recently got a hold of somebody that was over there and they told me that that house was worth over $1 million. But they did not sell you the land back then because they already knew that it was so valuable. They gave you a 50-year renewable lease in Hawaii. In 1962, they knew it was a paradise, and they knew they weren't going to let go of the land. And as far as the queen goes, you know, God save the queen if she comes over here and tries to take the property, because it ain't going to happen.
Okay. I hear you. Okay. Well, I yield. Thank you.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, Ronald from Oregon, a Western fella. What's going on?
Hello, Gerard. Good to be on the call tonight. I don't know what my question is now. I'm sure I had one. I'd like to be able to ask you one. And what could be a good question that nobody's asked you yet?
Look, we've been around the world in like 80 minutes and back again, so I don't know.
How many people were on the call tonight?
I don't know. I looked at one point and there was over 200. I mean, it says that we're down to 109 now at this point.
We only got a few.
Yeah, which is pretty good for 11:45.
Well, since I'm calling from Oregon, are you able to tell me if there are any other callers from Oregon on at the present moment?
Well, I don't see any right now, but that doesn't mean that I would know. You know, I mean, yours says Oregon.
Yes, there are.
Yes. Okay. Yes, there are. Gary says.
Uh huh.
So you can, if you're talking, you can talk to people in your state too.
Yeah, well, I've heard from PJ. I'd like to hear back from PJ, and my Oregon number is 503-718-1858 for any anonymous that would call me. But, you know, I'm always looking for mentoring, you know, from all of us and each of us, and that's been my greatest support in life, is realizing that how valuable that mentoring process is. I like the man that spoke from the rest home about his mentoring process, and that man brought out a concept that I haven't heard lately and made great sense for me, especially for the battle that I happen to be in right now myself. I'm battling the City of Portland, the Office of City Auditor, and the Bureau of Development Services, which is connected to this Metro 1313, and so it'd be our Metro here in the City of Portland, State of Oregon. In the state where there's been a lot of deregulation and the ending of some of the prohibition having to do with cannabis. So there's a greater awareness now that we're talking about cannabis and some of the products like hemp that comes from that versus the misnomer so-called marijuana.
Right.
But, gosh.
Hey, Washington said grow the hemp and grow it liberally. He knew that was supposed to be our product. I don't know if you know that.
I'd like to mention that I got to meet one of the founders of the Seattle Hemp Fest, and I wish I could say for this call and the listeners what year the first Seattle Hemp Fest took place. But I got to meet the man firsthand, live, and he's about 6'5", beautiful man with dreadlocks that hang more than 12 inches on the ground, and they're beautiful, well manicured locks. Anyway, the dude's a musician, but he is one of the founders of the original Seattle Hemp Fest, and he was telling me that at the very first Hemp Fest, there was just about 400 people there. And last year, and his now wife and one of the other co-founders, partner of the Hemp, Seattle Hemp Fest, who now has been since gone for 8-9 years, he says to me, last year there was over 400,000 people.
Wow.
So maybe some folks from the NALA could get there with some flyers and circulate, and maybe they could find a few more events like that still going on before we come into our fall and winter to help, you know, get some circulation, because that's a group of folks that have taught me an awful lot about history and my rights and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, and a lot of those folks are rooted into these beliefs, you know, for generations. You know, we've had a lot of people living in the hills and producing hemp and using it and knowing so much about the stuff. It's just wonderful, like everything else for me. You know, I heard someone say tonight on the call that he didn't know what he didn't know, and yeah, what an amazing day for this young man that had a very simple education. But I got my greatest education, I'll say, on the call, from being locked up in man's cage, his isolation cell, 24/7, where I got to read a book called Coming of Age in America. And from the very pages of that book, the black print that was on those pages, research into the book was by 12 psychologists, authored by 3, and they pointed out how if things were working like they could be, we'd be trying to get into the so-called prisons. They'd have to build the fences and the walls to keep us out, was one thing they pointed out. But also, if they pointed out to me why I couldn't graduate and even go on to a simple 2-year college. And it had nothing to do with me. Well, it had to do with who I am as a man and my DNA, I guess, and my gene structure. But they have this neat, nifty little system for weeding us, beginning to weed us out and call their herds, as you will. And
right.
I learned that from reading a book called Coming of Age in America. It's like reading the book written by Cheryl Isser by The Dumbing Down of America. You know, it's one of those that was that eye-opening and just really opened me up. But
right.
We don't know how many attorneys are listening on this call, do we?
Well, we got some. We know we got Oxbow. They're listening to us better than some of our people are because they produce little parodies, and they certainly get it right, which means they're paying attention really well. I wanted to extend the invitation for some of those attorneys to join us since they got, you know, the 2-cent stamp thing down so good and all that. Maybe we could use them in some other areas because they certainly are paying attention to what we're doing, and that's good. And I mean, they should certainly convert to us if they got a brain. But anyway, I'm gonna go to the next guy here. I want to try to catch as many as I can, and I just wanted to say I don't know if you know it. What's that? I was just going to say, did you know that Henry Ford produced a car that was made out of 100% hemp, including the body and the frame? And
I did know that, and he also
100 times stronger than steel.
Yes, and I also know that he ran that same car from hemp fuel.
That's right. So there's a lot there. Look, they didn't want it, just like they wanted us on an oil economy. There was a reason for everything. I can't believe that these son of a guns have planned things the way they did and carried it out the way they have. And look,
well, there's no vine on the planet that produces more gallons per acre of burnable fuel than the hemp than the cannabis plant.
No, it's unbelievable. And when you make rope or wood from it, it never molds. It never rots. You can leave it lay in the weather and come back 10 years later, and it's still good. It's
and
really
that's
amazing.
True. That's also true of all its products, like the 2x4 that would come from it.
Yep.
And then
there's
a food product, see, food, clothing, and oil. Yep. I mean.
Yeah, look, it grows in poor soil, and it fixes nitrogen. It's almost like the miracle plant, and of course they had to vilify it. You know, you understand, they didn't want us to have that because it would make us too independent. But look, I'm going to go to the next guy. We only got a few minutes here before this call's off, and
my best to you and yours, Gerard.
Thank you, Ronald. Appreciate it. Okay, we got a wireless caller, and the last 4 numbers are 1568 in the 412 area code.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
How you doing? It's a pleasure getting on your show.
Who is this?
I'm Mr. Black. Mr. Black.
Okay, Mr. Black. Nice to have you tonight.
I just recently got on the website, and very interesting stuff. The information, and like I said, I'm interested in joining. But one of the questions I did want to ask is that really I haven't seen anybody really deal with the fact that I think we have a remedy if we get a constitutional jury. If we get jurors that know the Constitution, we won't have a lot of these problems.
It's called jury nullification, and we do have it, but the judges lie and the prosecutors lie, and they even put certain jurors in jail for exercising that right.
Well, a lot of times, like I said, when you're picking a jury, I haven't went through the process of picking a jury, but if a juror doesn't know the Constitution, they shouldn't be a juror, period.
Well, really, the thing is you have people from the court picking the juries. That's the problem. They give them psychological tests. They ask them what shows they watch on television. And so what you have is you end up with a jury that the prosecutor can get to indict a ham sandwich because they're puppet juries. We have to have juries that are picked by the people. And that's what the four administrators will do for the grand jury in each county. Those four administrators will administrate that jury. They will pick them at random. We will then put them through an 8-hour course on the Constitution. So they'll get basis, and we will tell them, if there's no injured party, there's no crime. You see, one of the things that's going to help our big problem with logistics and all the work that has to be done is the fact that all this stuff is going to fall away, because we're not going to be prosecuting these stupid little victimless statutes that they have. And that's probably 98% of what these courts are doing. They're just fleecing the people for money for stupid speeding tickets and just little crap that they shouldn't even be getting involved in.
So one of the reasons how I found you guys, I found National Liberty Alliance, is I was really on a common law venue, and they had somewhere I can click on your website. That's where I basically found them. And like I said, they were, I don't know, they were saying they were having some success with the Seventh Amendment, trial by jury. Now, I've heard, but I have no proof myself where, when you put in some sort of affidavit, you can, request certain types of jurors. You say you don't want no Muslims on your jury, or, if you say I don't want any black people on my jury or any Asians because I'm, white or vice versa, they're supposed to give that to you.
Imagine so that. That's pretty funny in this day and age, right?
This is what I heard. I've heard people have gotten, that type of jury. Any proof of it? I haven't seen it, but
right,
I think the more so that we become educated as a, country on what the Constitution is, because a lot of people do believe and argue with you that they think these statutes are above the Constitution, which they're not. They're not law, So
I mean, there's various
Supreme Court cases on that. And really, I think the general public really need to understand that only, judges and jury can determine what the law is, not the legislative branch, not the executive branch. If it comes from these two branches, it's not law, and it's not. So, but
right.
Reason why I guess I want some help with where I'm joining as far as how to do these here habeas corpus, whether it's on the state level or whether it be on the pre-trial habeas corpus. Is it the same as when a person's incarcerated? So that's basically what I'm really trying to learn at this point.
Well, usually 9 times out of 10 with what we're doing is the person is in the state court or the county court, and when they violate their inalienable right by violating their due process or whatever, and we file the habeas corpus in the federal court above that court. So we move it out of the state court into the federal court. However, we just did 2 that were in the federal court to begin with. So we were forced to file them in the federal court because that's where the case initiated. And what you do there is you send the habeas corpus up to the chief judge. You name the judge, and you send it to the judge over him, who's the boss. And then you can keep moving it that way through the judges at the federal level. But you're always filing that you know, so that they have to answer, and then it goes up to their bosses if they don't answer. So, you know, whether you're in the state or whether you're in the federal. It's a little bit different wording, you know what I mean, to do it in the state and keep it in the state. Usually we don't do that. We usually don't file them in the state. You know what I mean?
Oh.
Although I don't see why it wouldn't work the same, because the fact of the matter is they're never going to answer those questions. If you file a habeas corpus in a county or in a state court, you're going to get the same results that you get when you're filing it in the federal court. You're going to get silence, probably. You know what I mean? I mean,
well,
the federal court won't take it unless you can prove that there's a violation of an unalienable right, which there always is with them, because they never uphold your due process. But, yeah, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, that's the thing, is that's the process, because a lot of times all these habeas corpus, they always get denied. And basically, I've learned some things as far as doing a habeas corpus. I was learning a lot of information from Bill Thornton, and I was sorry to hear, you know, he died a couple months ago. But,
I didn't know that. I hadn't heard that. My goodness.
Yeah, it said May 8th, 2015. You know,
wow.
So I was kind of heartbroken about that. You know, so good, really, really, really good guy. Good information. And,
yeah.
But I just wanted to learn, like, basically the process. So I like your group. I went to one of the meetings here in Pittsburgh, and it was pretty good. I like what I heard and like what I've seen. So,
well,
like I said, with the habeas corpus, I just basically want to learn how to do that. I don't know if you have to do a motion to dismiss your criminal case.
No, look at the reason that people are getting their habeas corpus is denied is because they're asking the judge. You don't ask the judge. You open up a court of record and you grant it to yourself. That's how you do it. But look at. You should go into one of the classes and learn how to write it, and that's the main thing. And we're going to have templates, so this is going to become easier for you. But look, we're
okay.
Out of time now, so we got to.
I'll call it next week.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, and I'm sorry about anybody that got stuck on the queue there, but.
About getting on the classes, because I want to learn how to do that. Okay.
Okay. Very good.
Thank you so very much.
Yep.
To look, having read.